meeting to order. Will everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance and invocation? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing everyone here today. Please be with everyone in our city. Please be with our employees. Please watch over our military. Please guide this meeting this evening. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. The City of Kirby is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our community in a socially responsible manner. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Here.
Councilmember Grant?
Here.
Councilmember Lehman?
Here.
We will move to item 5, citizens' participation. We have 3 individuals this evening signed up. The first one, BJ Voigt, 3634 Kirby. Subject is general.
Good evening, everyone. My name is BJ Voigt, as everybody knows. I live at 3634 Kirby Drive, and actually, I'm going to commend some people tonight. I want to commend Michael and them for taking care of the potholes that I sent in a thing. And I've lived in Kirby for over 55 years.
Thank you, BJ. Next is Chris Garza, 4807 Michael Collins, regarding posting council meetings, council minutes on the KirbyTexas.org website.
Good afternoon. I'd like to speak on the procedures that are taken to post the minutes to the website. I've come to find that there's a lot of inconsistency from previous meetings being posted, and I think there ought to be some type of procedure in place to make sure that previous council meetings are posted in a timely fashion. At the Government 101 classes, it was stated that the people in the office are all cross-trained, and in that case, I believe it's their responsibility to make sure that everyone has the ability to post out these council meetings after they happen. And this is all in an effort to ensure that the community has an opportunity to listen to these meetings at their leisure. This is an issue that needs to be addressed, and I'd like to see it remedied. It's becoming an issue to listen to these meetings after they happen when they're taking almost a month now to be posted. Thank you.
Thank you. Lastly, we have Mr. Steve Linscombe with Jetson ISD on a construction update.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. Just wanted to take a moment, just a brief moment to talk to you a little bit about some of the construction that's going on within the city of Kirby, more specifically where the bulk of the construction is going on at Kirby Middle School, which has been going on the better part of a year or so. And the renovations right now, of course, the architect being PBK and general contractors Bartlett Cock, the project overall is 86% complete, so we're rolling along pretty well at this point. Phase one, actually, the estimated phase construction completion is 98% because that is basically speaking to the gymnasium area, which is all but complete. They're kind of tying up a few loose ends there. Same story with the administration building, which is right there at the curbside at the very front of the campus area. Now, phase two is where the bulk of the work is going on at this point. That's the career and tech area, as well as the road improvements that are going on over in that vicinity. The CTE building exterior walls have been built, and the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing are all in progress in the interior. So there's quite a bit going on within the inside of that construction site. And then, of course, phase three, the additional road improvements, those are going to be starting up pending the completion of phase two. There's also some re-roofing going on that particular campus. The designer is Armco. The roofing contractor continues to be working on the cafeteria area more specifically, and the re-roofing of the existing Building A, which will begin once paving is completed by Bartlett Contractor. The completion is expected early spring of 2020, possibly early summer as well. And that is what is going on over there at Kirby Middle School. We'll continue to give you updates on a monthly basis via email where you can see what's going on at each and one of our campuses where construction is going on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes citizens' participation. We will move to item 6A, consideration and action on minutes for the public hearing and regular meeting minutes of January 9th, 2020. I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, make a motion to accept minutes.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to accept the public hearing regular meeting minutes of January 9th, 2020. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand. At this time, I will close our regular meeting at 7:06 and open the public hearing. Item 7A, on a request to allow the property located at CB5092R, Block 1, Lot 2, otherwise known as 5863 Ben Zingelman Road, Kirby, Texas, 78219, which is zoned light industrial, to be used for the following purpose: for the development of an apartment complex with approximately 70 apartment units. I will remind council that this is not for our discussion, that this is a public hearing for our public. We do have Mr. David Monich here, who is our developer. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this matter? Mr. Pittman, if you'd like, if you can go to the podium.
Just an easy question. What type of apartment unit is it, and what price range is it going to rent for? Okay.
Mr. Monich, if you'd like to, or Sharon?
Just whenever you're ready. Okay. I'm happy to come up and answer any questions.
Good evening. My name is Sharon Schuler. I live at 3110 Beth Alton Drive. And as all of y'all are aware, I'm very concerned about the appearance that we give for any kind of construction or facilities that come up in the city of Kirby. And I've seen the photos of the developers' projects, I believe, in Weslaco. Weslaco, is that correct?
Insinol.
I'm sorry. Insinol. And it looks like a great project, but I just don't think it's for the city of Kirby. I think it'd be best suited someplace over in Government Hill or Dignity Park or somewhere down East Houston Street towards downtown, where they're doing a lot of industrial buildings, the industrial look buildings. And I just feel it's not a good fit for Kirby, and that's just my personal opinion.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Residents? Anybody?
Sid Sanders on Ben Zingelman. Occurred to me that an apartment complex should be like a quiet area like the rest of Kirby. I do not think residents will have as much problem with it like they do with long haul developing down on Springfield. So maybe it would be a asset for the city. Thank you.
Anybody else? Mr. Colvin? Sorry, sometimes I can't see over our podium.
I'm George Colvin, and I spoke last week when we had the last meeting. I had the property adjacent right across from the fire department where the cows and stuff are. And I had a couple of questions that, and we have not spoken, David and I haven't spoken, and this is the only time, the second time we've met, so just so y'all know, we don't really know each other. But I was a custom builder for about 20 years and built in Alamo Heights and Terrell Hills. And so there's a question, I think one of the people last time we got together said, is this going to be a development like would be in Alamo Heights? It's not going to be a development like that. But I want to just say, I don't want anything next to me that this could be a project that could be very, it's going to be as nice as this gentleman makes it, and that could be for landscaping, the colors. I love to go to Whataburger, but I don't want to see Whataburger colors, so the way the colors and the that's going to have a lot to do with what he's going to do. The other thing that I don't know, and this is a question he may can address, I don't know what the time the start of this project will be from the time, if it were approved tonight, when would it be completed? Being that this is his expertise or his BSB or second development like this, my only thing is being in the building business, and I'm not trying to be this a negative thing, but sometimes we had architecturals that we had to have performance bonds. If something happens to him, or I don't know if there'll be maybe a developer that would come back in and want to take this project over. So being it's not out of sticks, and so would there be a cost to the city of removing that project, or so it is a cost to get a performance bond or having something for y'all to consider there. I am personally would I think this is a chance for Kirby to move. So I'm for it personally if it's done right. And I think it will be I don't know him for sure, but if he uses this model where he can make it as a sales tool, I think you could build these all over the country, because there is a need this kind of, this is things on the horizon. So I think the properties that are around here, I think the restaurants are going to get more business, the automobile shops. I think Scott said last week or whenever we got together, said, you know, business creates business. And so I think that there's going to be people around here going to get the benefit for that. Every business here in town is going to have a benefit out of this. But once it is passed, you know, if there's nothing, it's just the only thing you're doing is saying we can build there. So I know we'll be good neighbors, and we talked about privacy, and he's already said, well, we're going to do an 8-foot fence, and we're going to have good cameras and monitors and things like that. So I want to say that I'm for it, but those were a couple of questions that I would, and he might address those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colvin. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Colvin?
Hi, I'm Claire Coven, sister-in-law of George. We live on the other side, and for any residents, it's addressing it as Ben Zingelman, but this project would be on Ackerman, right across from the fire department. So everybody's kind of aware. So I did have questions for the developer last week, too. Some of my questions now are kind of more geared towards the amount of residents that would be there, how much more police force it would take, what kind of, I'm kind of more concerned about safety and residents and, you know, what it's going to bring in, positive or negative. So I guess kind of for that amount of people that would be living there, are we going to need more police and how that's going to be handled for making sure, because that's going to be adjoining my property as well for safety and security and things like that. So I just wanted to ask about that. I don't know if that's something the police chief can address as far as any more police that would be needed if there's going to be that many more residents in a certain area. So, thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak?
my loyalties in someone else's board. My loyalties in someone else's board.
Right.
Loyalty.
Do you want to wait till our? Do you want to wait to our discussion piece? We'll wait till it goes into our discussions after the public hearing. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Mr. Miles, do you want to go ahead and give your overview? Go ahead. If you want to give the overview again, Council, this is a public hearing, so we will have our chance to address during our discussion item.
Mr. Coven, let me first thank you all for the opportunity to come and visit with you all. First of all, I'll just say a few general remarks, and then I will specifically answer the questions, because, and I absolutely look forward to that opportunity. First of all, for those of you who are not familiar with the process of development, it takes years to build a project like this. We have I can't tell you how many professionals that are involved, from a structural engineer to architect to our civil engineer. And those plans have to be reviewed and approved per the city code. So it will take, and we don't endeavor and spend that kind of money if what we're proposing isn't, first of all, approved by code and meets the requirements of the city code in any other way. And then, at that point in time, we confirm our financing and move forward. It is not normal for bonding in this type of project, just to answer your question, because it takes a significant amount of money up front before we even start. This is the beginning. It will be 2 years from now. That's how long it takes. And so there will be multiple opportunities for people's input also. Now, first of all, just because it was the first question, not Whataburger. Okay. The pictures and the elevations that I have provided are multicolored, and we do have different types of architectural elevation designs that we will continue to bring forward as we move forward. But the first part of the process is coming here, just to get permission, because as Madam Mayor, as you mentioned, it is zoned correct for light industrial. So first of all, we just need to find out if we can build apartments there. It will take a while to figure out how many also, because we have to go through a long site development process. And we will be, unfortunately for y'all, seeing you a lot, because we want that kind of input. Now, with respect to security, a project like this doesn't have to have any impact on the security needs of the city, honestly. The project itself is based on bringing innovation and using innovative thought to create facilities that what we call reasonable housing. I don't like to use the term affordable, because some people think that's a negative term. But what we're looking for is to provide housing, and what we have done in our first in the first prototype that I built, if we've proven that we can provide a system that allows reasonable rental and also addressing true cost of living, so not just talking about the rent, I'm talking about the electric bill. One of our 960 square foot two bedroom apartments, which is the size of the typical two bedroom, our average electric bill is $60 a month right now, and that is in a facility that's located in Encinal. For those of you who are not familiar with that, that's 30 miles north of Laredo. It does average 105 during the summer there. So what we look is for energy efficiency and what we call green facilities. The addition, which is really important to us, is how this facility fits into the area from the standpoint of the landscaping and what I call the recreational component, which is important to us. In all of the developments that I have been involved in, we create small parks, we create recreational area for our tenants. We create areas where our tenants, who are working people, can utilize services such as ordering their groceries online and having them delivered to the facility. And there is a facility where, with refrigeration, where their groceries can be delivered for them so they can get them later at night if they have to work long hours. We even provide facilities for children, which that's just the beginning part of the part process. But this is more than just a standard apartment project. It's thinking about what kind of benefits can be provided that are needed in today's world. So as an example, for those of you who we use mesh antennas in our system, what that means is all the apartments have internet already when somebody moves in. We have full set of appliances for everybody. This is looking at how to give the, and I'm sorry for using a colloquial, the biggest bang for the buck for our tenants. So at this point in time, because we haven't been able to really spend the time on site planning, I'm not sure whether there will be 40 or 70 apartments. Like I said, the average two-bedroom will be 960 square feet, which is large. That's a two-bedroom, full kitchen. And then a one-bedroom is exactly half that, so 480 square feet. So the mix of and another thing that I had mentioned at the planning and zoning, which I'd like to bring up, is all of the first floor apartments are 100% ADA, because we design not only for working folks, but for handicapped, for VA, for our veterans. This is a facility that we take into account a lot of different types of tenants who would be moving in. And it is child friendly. And that's very important to us. The facility, my initial thought is it would not be built out onto the street. There would be a significant setback from Ackerman back, so that the buildings were farther back in the property itself. And the flood there, it does, that piece of property specifically does include a couple of acres of floodplain, so that area would be used as part of the recreational thought process that I was talking about. With respect to security, we build a secure facility for our tenants, and our tenants go through a credit review. These are working people. This is not government housing. Some people had asked me about that previously. This is using a system to provide amenities and good living space at a reasonable price. Are all of the specialists that we use, all of the professionals that we use for this design, actually have won several awards for this design with the state. Our architects are Alamo Architects. Our civil engineers are MBC engineers here in San Antonio. We have structural engineer, the whole nine yards. This takes a lot of work, and it's not particularly inexpensive to build. But it is a system that we do a lot of the work off-site and then bring it on site after we've built our foundations. So we go, once we get started, we go fast. But it will take, so the design process and going through the beginning will take as much time as actual construction. So in general, several months ago, I was approached by the current owner of the property and in his broker and asked if I would consider looking at this property. I had actually been up and down Ackerman because there is a serious demand for housing in the area, for reasonable housing. I even, and don't call the cops on me, crawled over the fence over at the 4F, the old 4H property, and even went and looked at that. So I've been up and down the street looking. Nothing new has been built in this area in a very long time. What we're talking about doing is introducing innovation. But innovative things that work for the people who want to be in your community. It's important for me to say, we want to be here, and we want to do it, and bring this notoriety to Kirby, because we think it will help. It will help this community, and we will be a good partner if we're given this opportunity.
Close this item for the public hearing. Is there anybody else? And we will hear again from Mr. Monich when council is able to discuss. Is there anybody else? If you'd like to set up the podium. And then if you want, Mr. Monich, as you're listening to these questions, if you want to address them during our discussion, you're more than welcome to.
Whatever works for you, great. You let me know. No problem.
All right, in your dissertation, you said renters. Do I interpret correctly that none of these units will be for sale?
That's correct.
Okay. You are the developer, right?
Yes, sir.
So you are the top dog?
Not only the developer, I will be the owner. I will be the manager, and I will be the general contractor.
All right. To coin a phrase, if I remember my history correctly, from President Truman, the buck stops with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Questions answered.
Thank you. All right. Is there any? Oh, Roger. Sorry, you were hiding
behind me. I want to answer your question directly. If somebody has a concern, they call my cell phone.
I just wanted to share. My name is Roger Romans, resident here in the community. One of the needs of the community, you were talking first floor, ADA compliant. We are predominantly a bedroom community. One of the needs we have in this community, and it would be nice if you'd take it in consideration, is elderly housing. Just like seniors, well, veterans have special needs, seniors also have special needs. And that's something, it'd be nice if that was taken into consideration, because a lot of the houses in the community with the elderly, at some point in time, they do need to go into a place that has the facilities available for them. And if you take that into consideration in your development, I think that would be a good plus for the community.
Absolutely.
I'm a resident. I just moved in like a couple months ago.
If you can state your name for a record.
My name is Noemi Araiza. I have a question for you. You said you're green. Are you going to use recycled or new thingamabobbers? What are they called?
Well, I'm not sure what a thingamabobber.
What do you?
So,
what are you doing?
And I'll come back once you're finished, and I'll answer all the questions to you.
What do you build? You're building the apartments with the.
Let me. I'll come up in a minute.
Okay. So that's my one question, and then. I used to work in apartment complex a couple years ago. You said that you're going to have them run a credit check. Are you doing it for all the tenants or just for the primary tenant or anybody over the age of 18?
I'll answer all those questions when I come over.
Okay. And then I want to know, somebody asked previously before you got up here, how much are they going to rent? And you didn't answer that.
I will answer.
Okay.
In just a moment, but I'm going to let you finish.
Okay, and then I want to know, you said that it's going to be good for Kirby, but you didn't say how. So how is it going to be good for Kirby? And then how are you going to have a limit of how many people live in your 480 square foot bedroom? Because you can't have like a whole bunch of tenants in one bedroom.
I find that.
It's actually not, it's not that interesting.
Well, in
there's
my facilities, a one bedroom is one bedroom.
Right, but.
That means at the most it's two people.
Okay.
At the most.
Okay. So you are going to have a limit of how many people are going to.
I will answer
all these. Okay. Okay, that's all my questions. Oh, wait, last thing. If you are going to use. Recycled
shipping container.
Shipping container. There, thank you. Do you know, like, what was in them before? Because some shipping containers do, like, transfer, like, toxic and hazardous stuff. So if you are going to use those, do you know what kind of containers you're going to get? That's it. Sorry.
Yes. Do you want to just answer those when we get to the discussion so there can be back and forth?
I just as well I do it real quickly
because
you don't mind me.
No, that's perfect. Nope, that's perfect.
All of the shipping containers that we use are
tested and graded. We buy them from a source in Houston where we know what they were used for. They are typically for transporting coffee. That has been almost every single unit that we've used was full of coffee. And we absolutely grade them and find out what they are. But then those units, they don't just come here and set up. They're taken to a facility where they're modified. They're changed structurally. And so... There is no concern from the perspective of if it was used for animal carcasses would be an example. That's what they're used for in many places. So no, these are clean units and they're modified and safe. Number two, the rents for these apartments. Are going to be around $800 for a one-bedroom to around $1,100 for a two-bedroom. Two-bedroom is typically, in the past, at least for us, has been for a family. So that was, what is your definition for a family? Is it two children plus two adults, that depends on whether they can afford the rent. Every potential tenant goes through a credit review. Every single tenant goes through a potential credit review with us, with me. And that's a very specific process. that we use. One of the major components of a credit review is, are they employed? Or can they show a consistent income source that means that they can afford the rent? I have tenants who are military, so they show us proof of their military funding. We have retirees. So we work through a lot of different processes during the credit review. These are not government housing. They're Monarch housing. That means I have to determine if folks can pay their rent that they're committing to. And we work with folks on that. Yes, sir.
Then you brought up Anthony James. You're not talking prefab, are you?
These are when you say prefabricated, this is on-site construction. The modules that we bring in are fabricated at our yard. Now, that fabrication process means that part of the steel is removed or properly installed at a yard where we have those gentlemen set up for that specifically. But then they're brought in and they're set up and put together. This is like a giant Lego program. And it goes very quickly. The pictures of the buildings that I provided, which is only 7 apartments, which was a prototype, it was only 7 apartments, but it's 2 buildings. That was what some people would call potentially module, but they're not like mobile homes, okay? They're not like manufactured housing. Well, but I think it's a good question. It's a really good question. These are built for inspection and to be inspected by the City of Kirby inspectors. It's true on what the definition with TDLR, which is the state, is on-site construction, and that's what it is. The prototype, which I said it was 2 small buildings, which is a total of 7 apartments. After I had put in the utilities and the infrastructure and the foundation, just to give you which is an I-beam foundation on piers, to build those 2 buildings initially, okay, took 17 hours to have the buildings up. But then we bring in electricians, plumbers, standard working folk to finish the work. So hopefully I've answered your questions. How is it good for Kirby? If you get in your car, which I'm not from Kirby, when I drive around Kirby and I go look at the existing apartments and I go look at and drive around the city, how is it good? I'm comparing what I'm getting ready to do to the apartments that are on next to the school on Ackerman. This would be a big difference, a big change. We're bringing change, needed innovation. It will make your city look innovative, and that's what I think is good. And it will also provide affordable, reasonable housing for people who want to live in your community. That's not available right now. So those are a lot of good things. with efficient energy efficient housing, which is absolutely needed. When you think about it, how much of your cost of living goes to your water bill, your electric bill, things like that? Those are things that we sit and think a lot about. High energy, high efficiency air conditioning systems. We use a type of insulation system that absolutely works. It's proven. Works incredibly well. So there's a lot of thought that goes into these. And it will make your community look like you're looking to the future of Kirby. That's good. And that's how it helps your community.
Anybody else who wishes to speak on this item?
We still do for Part B.
This is still a public hearing. I just want to make sure there's nobody. Okay. All right. So we will move to item 7B. We're still continuing the public hearing. Thank you, Mr. Monich. On a request to consider a variance to the sign ordinance, section 154.06D1, height of signs, to allow a pole sign with the height of 18 feet, and section 154.06B, to allow a 4-foot front setback located at CB5941, Block 2, Lot E, 50 feet of of 147.2 feet of 11 ARB 11B Block 2, otherwise known as 523 Edelin, 5416 FM 78 Kirby, Texas, 78219. This is actually Bob's Smokehouse, and Mr. Long is here this evening. Is there anybody who wishes to speak on this? All right, Mr. Long, do you want to go ahead and give your overview on that? And then, again, this is not for council discussion. It's for public hearing.
Okay. Well, Mayor, thank you to council for listening to from Bob Smokehouse. Actually, I've been here in the community about 11 years, and I haven't had a really official sign. And what I'm trying to do now is get a lighted sign, which is 15 feet, and I'm trying to convert it into 18 feet, which is it makes up the fork of the sign. I don't know if you have a picture of the sign itself, but actually it's 15 feet, and the fork would be 18 feet, which is 3 feet on the variance. Other than that, I don't know. Other than the sign, if you saw it, that's all I need to say about more or less the variance. Okay. Okay. I don't want to keep holding your time up.
Well, that's fine. And if we have any questions, we will absolutely come back to you when we get to that item further on in the agenda. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak on this item?
I just have a question for the gentleman.
Sure.
This sign is specifically for your business. It's not an advertising sign that's going to be advertising other stuff, correct?
Correct. It says official, says Bob Smokehouse, which I do have a picture of if you'd like to look at it. So, but yeah, just advertising Bob Smokehouse. Okay. Any more questions?
All right. We will move to item C. Thank you. On a request to consider a variance to the zoning ordinance, single family dwelling district R1, section 153.016, B6A, to consider permitting encroachment into the 5-foot side yard setback due to the construction of a carport and widening of the driveway located at CB4018A, Block 15, Lot 17, otherwise known as 5122 Cinderella Street, Kirby, Texas, 78219. Is there anybody who wishes to speak on this item? Do you want to wait till the discussion item, if there's any questions from council? Okay. All right. So at this time, if there's no one who wishes to speak on this one, I will close the public hearing at 7:45. and reconvene our regular meeting. We will move into item 8A, discussion and possible action on a request to allow the property located at CB5092R Block 1, Lot 2, otherwise known as 5863 Benzinguin Road, Kirby, Texas, 78219, which is zoned light industrial, to be used for the following purpose: for the development of an apartment complex with approximately 70 apartment units. We've heard all of the discussion this evening, and so now if council has specific questions that they would like to ask, now is the time.
Mayor, did you want to ask the representative of the Zoning Commission if he wanted to make a presentation?
I will, but you had questions, though, correct?
Just presentation a little bit and just...
General comment?
My opinion of it.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Sure.
Okay. First off, does anyone know what these buildings are going to look like?
Actually, you need to the public hearing is done.
I apologize. My name is Tom Hernandez. This went through me on the Planning and Zoning Commission that I'm on. The building of apartments, I don't much have a problem with it. The image of the apartments, I have a little bit of a problem with it, but that's not something for me to decide on. Someone mentioned that we haven't had any business in that area, and I concur. I haven't seen in the whole year that I've been here that anyone wanted to build anything. But you, as my fellow citizens, have to pass by there, see this thing, and this one, because it bothers me a little bit because of the image, I would rather you folks had a visual. So if you haven't seen it, I would highly suggest you take an eye look on it real quick. If we have the images that we may pass.
That's what our city secretary is doing right now.
Okay. Para ustedes que no hablan inglés, los apartamentos que van a poner arriba ahí en la calle Ackerman. A mí no se me miran bien como normal apartamento, y porque ustedes lo tienen que mirar cuando pasan a las calles, yo quiero que ustedes estén contentos como se miran. Porque no más hablas español. ¿Eh? Can I speak Spanish?
No.
Okay, there are some people that have some property that don't speak Spanish. I apologize for all that. Anyway, here's the Whataburger vision that. And the gentleman is building. I have faith that he's going to put something else other than that. He'll pay him if he has to. He's aware now that nobody wants to see Whataburger. That's what you'll be seeing a little bit back from the main road, I believe is what he mentions. Doesn't look too bad, but, I mean, again, these are containers. To me, I've got enough containers over here on a main road that I see. That's what bothers me. Other than that, I have the most luck, wish the most luck for him that he can build what he wants if it's available. But, again, you folks are the ones that are going to see it. And if you have something to say about that, please speak now.
You can't speak now.
I could about it.
That was the public hearing. You can't speak now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. I wish you could have seen it sooner and spoken about it. But as far as myself, I made the best decision I could with my partners. And I hope you don't hold it against me if you're running around the road and see something you just don't like. But again, it's got to come up to the city to decide. So I'll leave it in their hands, and I hope I made a good decision for y'all. Thank you.
All right. So as Mr. Hernandez mentioned it did go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and they voted 2-1 in favor of allowing the variance for this. All right, so y'all have heard the discussion, and you've heard Mr. Monich's overview of this, so now will be the time to ask your questions.
Yeah, the young lady over there brought up a bunch of good concerns about an apartment complex. He's planning to run 40 to 70 units. He's going to be the apartment manager. He's going to be the maintenance guy. He's going to be this. He's going to be that. But, you know, and you just said it here.
No, sir, we have a maintenance man.
Okay.
No,
so
no,
you
he
said...
He asked me who would be called, who could they call if there was an issue.
Okay. And that you'd be the right
that's
there.
That's the owner, yeah. And that's me.
Well, anyway, like I said, she brought up a lot of concerns. Okay, so when you go in an apartment complex, when you go in an apartment complex, you're going to have to get the cable that they give you. You're going to have to get the internet service that they give you. So you're not going to have a choice. You're not going to have a choice. Well. Anyway, I didn't interrupt you. Okay? Thank you. Not only that, we need to figure out the traffic situation there, especially in the morning, down Ackerman and Ben Zingelman, that intersection there. You're talking about 40 to 70 units there. You're talking about 80... to 160 more vehicles. How is Ackerman going to handle that? How is Ben Zingelman going to handle that? And like the gentleman was also saying, the side of the actual building leaves a lot to be desired. I think that we should, amongst ourselves, talk a little bit more about it before we even decide anything.
If you would, the gentleman asked about a prefab. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just letting Patty, if she could just flip through the different pictures.
Anyway, the gentleman was asking whether it's a prefab. Yes and no. Because are you using a standard?
No.
Well, let me ask you this: what size of 12? Are you using 12 by 20 containers?
No, sir. There are 40s. These containers that are used as a base for the system
are 40 feet
long. They're high voids, so they're 9.5 in size and they're 8 feet wide. And then they're modified from there to different types of modules or that we.
So you modify them and you widen them, is what you're saying on the frame. You widen them on the frame?
No, sir. They're standard. A standard container. Is 8 feet wide.
I've built a lot of them in the oil business.
40 feet long.
I know.
8 feet wide.
I gotcha.
And 9.5 feet tall.
Gotcha.
That is a standard system.
Right. We put them in the oil fields. When I was in the oil field business, we put them in oil fields, a lot of them. Made them apartments out of them. But if I've got this figured out right, you're saying 900 square feet is your business.
960.
So that takes 4 units.
3.
Okay, I'm sorry.
320 times 3.
Is that an L shape or a stack?
No, sir. They're not L shape.
Are they stacked then?
No, sir. They're 3 across.
Okay. All right.
They fit together.
You're talking about long ways.
Legos.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's one apartment is level. It's not upstairs, downstairs.
No, one apartment is 960 square feet.
I got you.
3 units adjacent to each other with certain parts of wall systems removed, different windows installed, etc. They fit together.
Correct.
And they then seal together.
So it's out of a ready-made unit?
No, sir.
That's been configured to make an apartment.
3 different modules are then brought in, then we put them together on site.
I got you.
That's what I'm asking you. It's three of these. It's these three trailers, three containers that are hooked together and modified.
They are modified before they're brought in, and then they're placed adjacent to each other, and they seal together because of the system. That's one apartment, a 960 square foot, two bedroom, okay, as an example.
But they're made from a container that's already been constructed.
I'm sorry?
It's made from a container that's already been constructed.
That is where we start from.
Okay. And so it remains the same width and height and everything?
No, sir. A standard apartment is more than 24 feet wide, and they're 40 feet long, maintaining that component of the container. But it's three, so that's 24 feet. And they're, like I said, they're 9.5 feet tall inside.
So you say it's 120 foot long and 8 foot wide.
40 feet.
Yeah, 3 times 4 is 12. I get it.
Okay, but let me explain it again. They're 40 feet.
Like a rectangle.
Long. They sit next to each other. Yeah. Okay.
One way,
so
not side to side.
40 feet long.
Right. So three times four is 12, is it?
No, sir. We're not placing them length to buy. Please. Please, if you look at the pictures, you'll see they fit 1, 2, 3.
Oh, you're not doing length, you're doing width. Gotcha.
40, 40, 40.
24 by 40.
24
by 40. Got it. Okay.
And you indicated at the planning and zoning meeting, I believe somebody was asking about the height, and you indicated that they would always be 3 high, correct?
The module, the blocks will be 3 stories.
And then, you consider those a pod, I believe is what the term you used, and that if it went through, and if after you did all of the land review and was able to place them, there would possibly be 7 of those pods if the project was able to all be done with your estimated 40 to 70, correct?
Yeah, but at this point in time, we need to get the permission
right
first to just even know if we can
correct
put apartments out there. And then what we will do is a significant site plan analysis to determine how many pods will actually fit. And keep in mind that we have to also include parking with that and access and all that. So it takes quite a bit of thought process to that.
Here's another problem I have with this. He's saying it's a portable housing. You can go down to Wood Lake and get the same thing that he's offering, but a little bigger for a single, and a little bigger for a double. You can go down here across from the HEB and get the same thing. I thought he said this was affordable housing.
So it's 650 an instant now, but it's not here.
No, that's not what he said.
I know, I'm just thinking what it was.
650 is down south.
Right.
I have some questions. What other cities in this area around Bexar County have you have a project like this that's finished, done, working?
I'm sorry.
What other locations around Bexar County do you have with this already set up?
I don't have any in Bexar County.
Have you gone to what other cities then?
Texas is where my prototype is.
So it's a prototype. So the one here in Kirby would also then be a prototype for this area.
No, sir. It's just, it would be, we know how to build them. We know exactly what we want to do. Our architects, our structural engineer, our civil engineers, all were involved in the project originally. So everybody who's involved knows how to build it. So it's not considered a prototype.
I've got all that. I understand that.
It's different than what would be seen in other parts of the state.
Right. That's what I'm asking. Have you gone to any other cities besides Kirby? No. Okay. So then if this wasn't installed in Kirby, that would be then a selling point for you to go to the other cities that are in the surrounding area? If this was built Would you use this as a selling point, Kirby, as a selling point?
Potentially, absolutely.
Yeah, for your other locations.
I've built 10 Target stores in Tyler, multiple units here in San Antonio, et cetera. And when somebody says, have you ever done it before, I show them a picture of it.
Well, of course.
But whether it's a sales point or not, I would just be talking about my resume at that point.
Right.
So this would only be your second apartment building that you built?
Of this type.
Exactly. That's what I'm asking. This would be only your second.
Of this type.
That's
right.
What I'm
I
asking.
I built over 2 okay. million square feet of buildings.
Did Chief walk out?
I got the door?
Yeah.
Oh, the call? Okay. I was going to ask him to address the population increase if he was there, but... Maybe. Do you want, you had mentioned at the PNZ meeting too, you were talking about that each, that they are sprinkled, and because there was a question then about the fire and what that, so.
And I appreciate you asking that because I forgot to mention that. They are 100% sprinkled. 100%. And with alarm systems in place. And that is not just for code, just because some of you may know apartments, and your apartment system, your apartments here in Kirby now are not sprinkled, and they're not along our hallway. This would be 100% sprinkled, and 100% with smoke detection and alarm system. 100% wired and monitored. All the time.
Chief, can you, there was a question regarding the population increase, because if you figure, let's just go low end, 40 units, if there was, that would add, let's just say, a minimum of 80 people. And of course, there would be children possibly.
When Mrs. Colvin brought that up a little bit ago, I was sitting here doing some math, even on the high end. If they were all four-bedroom apartments, normally a two-bedroom apartment, so I would expect more than about four people in that type of apartment. So on the high end, I think that would be an increase of about 280 residents that were within the city. From a police standpoint, I don't think that would put much of an impact on the crime rate or the response times. We have areas in the city right now where residents that live here 20, 30, 40, beyond, that we've never serviced to, and then we've got areas where it's a weekly basis, so it's kind of hard in this format to say will it be an impact. Personally, I don't think it would be much of an impact. I would be more concerned with the location of entrances, driveways, and like some of the council members brought up, that's already a busy intersection in the morning, and I still a little bit confused on the address because it doesn't meet the norm. You know, it's fronting Ackerman Road, but it's a Benzingerman address that doesn't. So that would be my concern from the police department standpoint, the flow of traffic in and out. Max on the population, I wouldn't perceive that as being a big impact on the department culture.
And Mike, as far as the water supply? Mm-hmm. With the influx of additional people?
No, it shouldn't have any effect on the pumps and the wells. I think we have a little bit more population, so it wouldn't have much impact on it.
Okay.
Well, the one negative thing I do see is I dare you to go first when you pull up at the stop sign going either way. It's like, you know, I come up, and I'm sitting here, and for instance, right there by the VFW, there's two guys in a row, and I'm sitting there, and I let the guy go. It's his turn, and I'm going to turn left. Well, the minute I turn left, that guy goes, because why? He's already stopped for that stop sign. I mean, I've lived here 40 years, and unfortunately, some of us don't understand that we don't have about $60,000 to set that intersection up with a traffic signal. We've had several chiefs look at it.
Yes.
$275,000, which, you know, that doesn't come out of our back pocket. And we've tried to have it engineered, how many different ways, I can't even remember anymore. But I can tell you this, all kidding aside, and it is, it really is fun to pull up there when school is letting out. You might as well just go around the block, because you're not going to be able to turn right. Or, well, if you turn right, you're safe. The other bad thing is, on the Ben Zingelman side of it, by the convenience store, that is so wide that invariably, if you stop, somebody pulls up on your right and turns right. It's not meant to be that way. It's only designed for two lanes, not four lanes, but we have people out here that can't quite get the grasp of that situation. And when we widen Ben Zingelman on the other side, and it becomes as wide as it is on this side, we're going to have the same problem. And I don't think that that landowner, we've already tried to get him to buy it, a piece of that corner to try to circumvent it, but it didn't work. So, I mean, just that alone is a horrible thing, and I don't think anybody's thought about that, but just like this evening, I almost got broadside to come to city council meeting.
And I did want to mention what our chief had mentioned about the Ben Zingelman. The reason that it actually has that address is because that's what BCAD has. They don't, since that's just an open property, it doesn't show Ackerman.
It's an SWAG, so, chief.
So I just wanted to let everybody else know, because that was addressed at the planning and zoning, how come it actually said Ben Zingelman? Because the Colvins had actually asked as well, and I just want to let everybody know there was a deep discussion at planning and zoning as well. The Colvins had asked as far as where, if this was approved, what entrance and exits would be there, and so it was determined that there would not be any entrance or exit off of Ben Zingelman, that it would all, so everybody's, what everybody's discussing is that it would come from Ackerman. So it would be an access off of Ackerman, nowhere near Ben Zingelman. There wouldn't be any roads that went on that side to get out. So it is just a one entrance exit set up that way.
So hopefully not a lot of people want to egress or enter at one time. You're going to stack up Ackerman the minute they do that.
You know, if working people are living there, I can just imagine the traffic trying to get out of there at 6, 7, or 8 o'clock in the morning and then try to return back at 4 or 5 or even the time that the kids get out of the elementary school.
Exactly.
I mean, putting a lot of pressure on the roadway.
We got to look at the future of Kirby. I mean, either apartment complex there, they're talking about putting one down there on Seguin Road. What are we going to do? Stop everything because of the traffic? We've got to move forward. And this will be sales tax into our city coffers. In the future, there could be more businesses going up and down Ackerman Road because of this. I just think it's a good idea.
It would bring more money into the city. We would be attracting more businesses to the city, and that's what we need. Kirby is at a standstill, and we need something new here. And I think that this is a good idea. It's going to bring more people in. Like Mr. Monick said, these people are going to have credit checks. He's going to make sure that they have the money to be able to live here. What are they going to do? They're going to spend their money here. And this is what Kirby needs. And I know that people don't take change very well, but I think that this is a good idea for the city.
Mr. Monick, do you happen to know, as far as, because that was another thing that was mentioned at planning and zoning, they were talking about the tax base and that it wasn't going to bring taxes in, that it was just a dead end, like we weren't going to get any revenue from that land from the apartment complex. So would you like to touch on that as far as, because you had actually made a statement about that as far as what you believed it would. Would you?
70 apartments are going to cost $7 million. It's going to be the incredible boost that you will see spend money nearby where they live. And that's important.
And as far as the funding for your project and investors, I believe you had mentioned that the owner, the current owner, is also an investor at the PNZ meeting, I think you had mentioned.
He's committed that he wants to be an investor in the project if he, you know, if we are able to move forward. It's standard construction financing that we obtain from the banks in the area. And it's, you know, it would all be secured before we started.
Do you foresee, if it was passed, do you foresee anything that would keep the financing from happening? I mean, is it something that, or is it something that you already have funded if it was a go?
We actually have, with the fact that the landowner wants to be part of the project, is a big help with that. Because the land is part of the equity infusion that then is an incentive for the banks to help us in that process.
Did you have any issues when you did Encinal? Was there any pushback as far as, no, we don't want to do this because it is too innovative or it's not?
We were welcomed.
Okay.
They needed housing, and they needed. The mayor, the city manager of Encinal spoke to me just the other day asking me to please build more.
And is that something that you foresee happening in Encinal?
Yes.
Anybody else have any questions? Or comments or any of...
I got a comment. QT's, which is a new business that we have in Kirby. As soon as everybody found out that they were coming to Kirby, the land and stuff that was around that jumped in price. Which made it even worse for if there was a new business wanting to come in and have a prime location, which that area is a prime location, otherwise I don't think QT's would have chose it, they couldn't afford trying to buy the property anywhere around there because everybody almost doubled or tripled the prices. So tax base, you put something in like this, then the property value that people would assume or think jumps. So any of the other businesses that would try to come in with what has been talked about here, those people would inject the prices of that land.
It's already impossible to buy a piece of property in Kirby. The people who own the old 4-H truck, it's ridiculous. Nothing is going to happen. And that's economic.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But those people that are jacking the price of the property up and everything else because they foresee it as a giant income boost or something, that also is negatively affecting the sale of that land. Because
well,
something that would be technically valued at, we'll just say what you're looking at, $1 million, everything around it, they're going to think, $2 million. Because this is being built there. So that, I mean, it's good, and then it's also got its downside to it. If it was good, then why not take it to another city to see about having them sign off on having this built so you can use another city as a selling point on what you would consider tiny homes. That's how I look at them being shipping containers. I mean, you can change the facade of that thing any way you want. I have concerns about fire protection. You've answered those. They're being addressed because you have federal, local, and state mandated, well, technically federal laws that mandate all the different things that have to be done for those. Training for a firefighter fighting that would have to be different than a firefighter fighting a normal house fire made out of wood, some parts metal, and everything else.
There's very little that's even able to burn.
Well, yeah, that I would agree with, but that technically isn't a residential type fire, business type fire, commercial type fire. That's an industrial type fire.
That's why we have sprinklers.
Yes. Like I said, you answered a lot of the questions. The thing is, though, the lady brought up too, how does this benefit Kirby? Being what I've just said, being now all of a sudden the land goes up, property taxes, we can discuss that 10 ways to nothing on all these different things. How is that going to actually benefit Kirby? I mean, are you? We've already talked about traffic, so are you willing to go back and have the engineers look going in on that property, another turning lane, just for that building, for coming into it, and you're coming up from I-10 or southbound on Ackerman Road? What's the exit going to be like for people trying to leave in the morning? I'm saying, I mean, there's a whole slew of different things that everybody's going to have to look at. And it's all on your side, your engineers, your pre-planning, and how this setup is going to be. Those are prefab, because you already made a statement earlier that some of it's going to be prefab brought in and, yes, put together like Lego. Your building and structure on the interior, those are supposed to be prefab before you bring the containers out.
No, no, the metal studs and all the cabinetry and flooring and all that system is installed on-site.
On-site, okay.
That's called on-site construction.
Okay.
That's part of the process of making sure that they're inspected properly.
Mayor, may I make a suggestion? It seems to me that there's a lot of still questions. I would like to table this, have staff look into this a little bit more, maybe contact the city manager in Encinal, and just see where we're at with this. There's more questions, I think, than answers.
Well, I have a question, though, about the traffic, because everybody's, you know, not everybody, but we've made, you know, our chief had made a comment about traffic as well, and several of you had made a comment about traffic. But I'm sitting here trying to think, what if anything, what if it was an apartment? I mean, there was going to be, I believe the previous owner was going to do barbecue pits or something. But I'm just saying, at any point, if anything goes in there, there's going to be some sense of traffic that we're going to have to figure out how to deal with, whether it's an apartment complex, whether it's a strip center. I don't know, but I mean, to me, to just prohibit, I don't want to say innovation, but anything being built there, I don't know how many other opportunities there will be for something to be built there. And if there is, as far as the traffic situation is going to be exactly the same. You know, regardless of what goes in there, and that's my concern, if we're looking at it just for the purpose of the traffic. I mean, I know there's other concerns, but I'm just saying, if we're looking at just for the pretense of traffic, any business that goes in there, because it's not going to go on the Colvin side, then it's not going to go out on Ben Singelman. So as a city, you know, that's something that we're also going to have to figure out how to plan that piece of it. The property that's in front of the Country Oak Apartments now, at some point, I mean, they've already got stuff going up there, so at some point they're going to sell something. I don't know what it's going to be, but that's going to also contribute to traffic, and there's a school right there. So I would think that if we're only talking traffic, if that's the biggest, one of the biggest concerns, I believe that that's something that we'll have to work out with any business with our experts and that do deal with traffic control. And
well, yeah, Councilman Pierce brought up a good point. And that's not those apartment complexes is not going to be a normal business traffic thoroughfare. It's not. It's going to be more than that. But not only that, we haven't even covered the drainage issue around that apartment complex.
Correct. And that was actually, like I said, I really wish that everybody...
That's why we should table this issue.
Well, and as far as that, though, that was part of the site plan, which was also addressed at the planning and zoning. I don't know, can it be tabled? Can it be, the discussion be tabled since there's a...
Real quick, have you already been to the state to seek all the different things it takes to change the topography and the water flow of a natural water flow?
Well, first of all, in the development business, we can't change that.
I know that. I've dealt with it. I understand.
And number two, we don't even know if we can build apartments here or not.
That's what I'm saying. Kind of
we don't spend money on all these questions that you're asking when we don't even know if we can do the project.
Because they can't, and that was the thing as well. I really wish everybody would have been able to go to the P&Z because they can't, the site plan hasn't been even discussed because unless the variance is approved, they can't even move forward. So they can't even begin to design or decide.
Well, actually, they can't go to TQ and they can come out and tell them whether or not. I can call tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock and she will take it up, pull it up on a map and look at it and tell you exactly, just like she did for Big Boy for me. And
well,
tell me how
again,
much can be changed and how much can't.
Correct. But what I'm saying is those pieces, he can't decide specifically until somebody says, yes, you can even start planning.
You're not missing my point, Mayor. What I'm saying is the state right now can tell him whether or not he can build it.
That's absolutely not true.
And it absolutely is true.
No, it's not. I'm in the process of building today, right now, 356 homes on the southeast side of San Antonio. I'm doing a Glomar and a Lamar on one of the sites. I do LIDAR, satellite imagery on every single project I do. This all costs a significant amount of money to determine. We will not be affected, and we cannot cause any water flow onto our neighbors. That's federal law.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I understand that.
That's federal law. We cannot. We have to figure out a way to manage it. That's part of the design process. We don't even know if we can build apartments here or not.
That's my point exactly, and the state can tell you that.
They cannot. The only people that can tell me whether we can build apartments here are you.
No.
So far as the tabling, though, because there is publication.
Go ahead, Mayor. Sir.
If you're asking me, Mayor, someone can make a motion to table this matter. A motion to table must be seconded. It is not debatable. It is not amendable. And the vote on it is a majority.
But can we bring it back up without?
We don't have to advertise again because the public hearing is held.
Okay, so we don't have to advertise again.
Are only required to hold the one. The P&Z held a public hearing.
Correct.
You held a public hearing. The consensus in the legal community is that is sufficient to satisfy the public hearing requirements under Chapter 211 of the Local Government Code.
Okay, and before anybody even motions to table, I want to understand that if that happens, what exactly are we expecting to get from the table and a second and vote to table it? What information do we need?
I want to find out what NCL feels about it.
Okay, so that's when...
Right? I want to know what the state does because this gentleman's not correct, but I can prove that tomorrow.
That's what I'm asking. Like, from this, what is it going to... What part do we need? Are we going to table it, or do you want to postpone it?
If we table it, we need to be able to direct staff and city manager
For the next meeting. If we postpone it till you get further information, so table and postponing, that's why I'm asking. If we table it, it has to come to the next council meeting. If we postpone it, it will be when that information is gathered.
Then I make a motion we postpone.
Until
we get the information from Encinal and the state.
Okay, and what information are you specifically requesting?
I'm requesting from the state, from the water people, to look at it and tell me whether or not they're going to okay it or not. And they can do that.
And whether they can build on that.
Yeah. I know for a fact they can, but with the city...
That's fine. I don't. So that's why I'm asking what you're looking for. That's way above my...
Because right now all we know is you want to postpone it. We need to know, number one, to direct staff. Number two, to direct staff. Number three, number four, number five.
Number one is to contact the city of Encinal, city manager. Thanks.
And Mayor, if the motion is a motion to postpone, then... The rule is a little different. It still must be seconded. It is debatable. It is amendable. But it also requires a majority vote. So we're clear on the difference between a motion to lay on the table and a motion to postpone. And a motion to postpone should state when it's postponed until. So the next meeting or the first meeting in February, the second meeting in February. If you make a motion to postpone, please include in your motion to when it is postponed.
Second meeting in February.
Second meeting in February?
February.
I'm afraid if you postpone this thing, this gentleman's going to walk out the door and that property is going to sit there for another 20 years. Just because y'all won't even give him the authority to move forward to the next step, that yes, we will let him build apartments there, but he's got to go through all of these steps anyway that you're wanting answers for now. So when he goes through all of these steps, and every one of them is going to come back to us for approvals, at least the man can move forward. If we turn him down now, I don't blame him.
I'm not going
to
turn him down.
Yes, you are.
Well, let me ask you a question though, Jerry. When what's his name was building all the 10 buildings up here on Old Seguin Road, you got all excited and really angry because he was building 10 buildings again. What do you think these are? They're 10. They're metal.
They're better.
Huh?
They look decent.
All right. That is your motion to postpone?
I just withdraw it. I'm out of this. Just y'all do what you want. I just give up. I'm serious, man. I withdraw it. Somebody make the motion whatever we want to do. We'll see.
Mayor, I make a motion that we accept the request to allow the property located at CB5092R, Block 1, Lot 2, otherwise known as 5863 Ben Zingelman Road, Kirby, Texas, 78219, which is zoned light industrial, to be used for the following purpose: for the development of an apartment complex with the proximity 70 apartment units.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Lehman, to request to allow the property located at CB5092R, Block 1, Lot 2, otherwise known as 5863 Ben Zingelman Road, Kirby, Texas, 78219, which is zoned light industrial, to be used for the following purpose: for the development of an apartment complex with approximately 70 apartment units. Is there any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Mayor, you should have stayed home. I mean, I'm still up for discussion.
Discuss?
Because there are certain points that are being brought up. Jerry's bringing up certain points. He talks about 20 years. Well, 20 years ago, things could have been changed too. And they weren't. Mike brings up a good point, you know, tin, metal, however. When he talks about driving around the city, knowing the city, and no new businesses have been here, we're just a little over a year on QTs right now. We're still figuring out what the tax base is going to be on that at certain levels. I mean, it's something that I want because we need to rejuvenate, but what the cost is going to be. I mean, to me, again, these are tiny homes. I see stuff like this down in Ensenal, down at Fort Shell being done, done at a reasonable rate and then rented out. Great revenue for the person that's doing this. I know he said he can change the colors. They can even put whatever facade on the outside of these things so they don't even look like what we just discussed about a metal building, tin building, or anything else. I mean, I know that's something that wanting to do. I mean,
do you want to address that? The facade or it looking like a metal container? It doesn't have to be orange, right?
They won't be.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can change.
I showed you pictures of something I built. I didn't say that this is
right,
the color you have to have. I mean, I have elevations right now that are white or tan.
Well, you can put anything on top of that.
You can do whatever you want.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I know that.
So,
and seeing different things there. I mean,
Yeah, but this wasn't about architectural review.
This is my time right now, and I know that was
I understood that this was solely for, it was a special use permit. We have a lot of work to do, from my perspective, of drawings and architecturally getting it right.
My other concern is, too, that you came to Kirby for whatever reasons, but I haven't heard anything about going to any other city around here, anywhere in Bexar County, anywhere in San Antonio. There's nothing's been tried there. I mean,
I was asked to come here.
Yes.
By the landowner.
Right.
So that's why I'm here.
Right.
I have an opportunity.
Right. That tells me a lot, too. That tells me a lot, too.
A landowner who hasn't had anybody, that property's been for sale for quite a while, and has had nothing.
Well, it's like fishing. You throw out a line, put a bait
out.
You may or may not get a hook.
Well,
4-H
back there. How long has that property not been developed? The answer is at least 40 years.
My answer is no. Continue.
Council Member Grant?
No.
Council Member Layman?
Yes.
Council Member Salazar?
No.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes.
That's why we need to get you to be here.
A tie vote means the motion does not pass.
Correct. All right.
Good luck.
Thank you very much for being here and for discussing. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Good luck with you, too.
All right, we will move to...
NCS.
We will move to item 8B, discussion and possible action on a request to consider a variance to the sign ordinance section 154.06, D1 height of signs to allow a pole sign with a height of 18 feet and section 154.06B to allow a 4-foot front setback located at CB5941 block, 2 lot east 50 feet of S147.2 feet of 11ARB 11B block 2, otherwise known as 523 Edelin 5416 FM 78 Kirby, Texas. If everybody recalls, that's Bob's Smokehouse, and it is for a sign. The forks extend to 18 feet, or maybe the forks are 3 feet. Do you have a picture of that too, Patty?
It's the biggest fork you've ever seen in your life. Mayor, without further ado, the gentleman that's sat here is an established business. He's been here for a long time. He is a good person, a good asset to Kirby. I make a motion we accept this.
Second. We're going to go on without you, Patty. Councilmember Grant's motioned and Councilmember Apodaca seconded.
So what are we voting on? Just
we are, setback? It is a we are considering the variance to the sign ordinance section 154.06, the height of the sign to allow a pole sign with a height of 18 feet, and section 154.06 to allow a 4-foot a 4-foot, that's double there, setback. There isn't a sidewalk there, it's
No.
No.
Correct.
No, it's just open dirt.
Yes.
But
it's a drainage ditch.
Let me question. Bob, at the other meeting, the EDC meeting that you was at, you've got an 18-foot tall sign on your paper to start with. So really all you're looking for is a 4-foot setback.
Well, our ordinance says 15 feet, but his sign is 18 feet, so the forks make it 3 feet over So it's both of them.
We're going to give a height of 3 more feet.
Yes, that's correct.
There it is.
Okay, that's it, right there.
All right, so we have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Ames?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Yay.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, council. Thank both of y'all. Yeah.
So
there you go. That's right. Thank you.
When do you think that will, when will you be able to start?
The sign man called me today and told me to text him tonight to see if y'all approved it.
Awesome.
So he called me today.
Look forward to seeing it.
Just keep
the banana fruit
there.
I sure will. Especially for you. Sure will. Now, thank you again, Mayor and the council.
Thank you.
City manager, thank you.
All right, we will move to item 8C, discussion and possible action on a request to consider a variance to the zoning ordinance, single family dwelling district R1, section 153.016B6A, to consider permitting encroachment into the 5-foot side yard setback due to the construction of a carport and widening of the driveway located at CB4018A, block 15, lot 17, otherwise known as 5122 Cinderella Street, Kirby, Texas, 78219. Does anybody want
to? Is everybody here to speak for it?
I'm her neighbor. She left a letter. Should I read it?
Sure.
Right.
You mean she would steal it?
I'm just kidding. Make it official. Oh, it's a little blood. No, I'm kidding.
Gotcha.
Says, to whom I may concern, due to unforeseen circumstances, I am not able to attend tonight because I am out of the country for an emergency. Therefore, I am writing this letter to be presented at this meeting held on January 23rd, 2020, located at City Hall. Please accept my deepest apology. It is my understanding that tonight will determine the outcome of this hearing regarding the carport that was constructed at 5122 Cinderella Street, San Antonio, Texas, 78219. I understand that the dimensions to my addition are in question. However, at the time of building, I made sure my neighbor to the right of me had no issue with how we were building it. I now know that there are proper steps to build a carport, and I want to apologize if this hearing felt like I did not meet regulation. We worked hard to make sure our carport was a good addition to the neighborhood using great materials. My husband and myself personally built the carport ourselves. It took us a month to finish it, and after approximately 5 months of finishing our carport, I got summoned to this hearing. I do apologize. I want to take this chance to thank you for your time and understanding. And then she signed it. And the homeowner is Maria Asagueda, and she was in attendance at PNZ. And that one also passed with them.
And Mayor, it would be appropriate if that letter could be given to the city secretary.
Sorry, I was breathing.
Received a telephone call from the neighbor facing the property on the right, Mr. John Bishop, who is in opposition of the property because it's close to his house.
Because it's in his, correct?
It's his. I was going to say.
Is that at 5126? Or 5118? 5118?
Yeah, 5118.
Oh,
so
this is me.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, how much does it go into his? It goes into his right-of-way, doesn't it?
She's showing the property line. Yeah, she's showing the property line and where that concrete.
Oh, I could have this before.
Yeah. The concrete goes all the way up to the property line.
Oh.
And the carport extends.
It looks like from the pictures. I wish they would have taken that from the street so we could see further how close it is.
Well, there is one that's taken from the street.
Are you seeing which one it is?
Right here.
There's another one.
Oh, well, Patty, do you have the one that actually shows back up?
Okay, so now they haven't done the work. They want to extend this over.
No. The carport's already built.
That's what I thought, because, yeah.
And the carport's already built, and the driveway has already been
in a portion.
Correct.
Oh.
It's already done. Is it up? Is it sideways?
It is sideways, yeah. Now I see what it did.
No, there's another
no,
one.
No, there's another one. It, where it shows it into the other people's.
Right there. Can you see where the carport
right.
and the concrete go up to the fencing?
There, yeah.
So the gentleman that's technically we're standing in the street on the right, he's the one that's opposed to it.
Okay, so my understanding is we do not pass this. He's going to have to take it up.
Correct.
And the man whose land it's on is not happy.
Okay. That sounds like it's familiar.
Did the neighbor, when it was being built, contact the city?
No, not that I'm aware of. Yeah. Only our first contact was when it was noticed by the
Okay.
So it was done, and who found it first, co-compliance or
yes.
the neighbor?
No, there is a, in our packet there was a summation of what happened. So on November 19th, Officer Thompson and Officer Lynette went to the address. They advised the homeowner that the carport had to have a permit. The permit was applied for. However, then one of our staff members also said because of after they filled it out, after they realized where it was sitting, then the city had to note to let them know that it actually encroached in that setback
okay,
and right. was encroaching on the neighbor's.
All right, let me ask you this question, Mayor. Up until that point, the person whose property it's encroached upon, did they have a problem until it was brought to their attention?
We don't know. And I don't know if it's a gentleman, but was it a gentleman that? There wasn't anyone at planning and zoning for that other than P&Z did say if you could bring your neighbor. Because I think at the P&Z it was suggested that the neighbor didn't have an issue with it. And then they also brought the gentleman to the left.
Yeah, that's us.
Oh, that's you. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's in my neighborhood working. But
so then they, I believe it was Julie had asked to make sure that the person to that was actually on the side came to the meeting or...
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Well, I would only say this. If the person whose property it is on now, it seems to me, if I'm hearing this right, they didn't have a problem. So we brought it to their attention through our person catching it. And now they have a problem because somebody told them, oh, my God, it's 2 feet, 3 feet on your land.
Well, I'd like everybody to look at this as if it hadn't happened yet. And I only say that because we had this come up.
Well,
so if I would like everybody to view this as if this carport wasn't already built, how would you view that? And the only reason I ask is because there was a variance for a carport at our last council meeting that didn't pass that had...
I mean, common sense would tell you, Mayor, that I'm not going to pass something that's going to encroach on somebody else's property. I mean, that's common sense. And I agree with you there. The problem is now that we're trying to decide, are we going to make this guy take a jackhammer or whatever it takes or a sledgehammer and remove the cement? But what I'm trying to say this in all fairness, if I got it correct from what you're saying that Officer Thompson saw it, the person whose property it's encroaching upon didn't have a problem until it was brought to their attention.
And I don't know... I don't
by
know
what you're reading to me.
No, that he isn't. The gentleman that's at 5118 isn't mentioned in here. The city manager had just...
No. They recall that his property is on, right?
Today.
That's what I'm trying to say. Suddenly, they have a problem because our city people saw it and brought it to the city's attention. Up until then, they didn't have a problem. How long has it been
and
there?
And I will just say that happened because we sent out the notifications that it's going to be on the agenda, and the neighbor just said he was unable to attend and wanted to express his concern. So
okay. How long has it been there?
It's been there since July.
know if it was okay, and to our understanding, the neighbor was okay with it, and he even expressed that he would like for them to also help him do an addition like they were building. So he, you know, at the time, that was our understanding. And then, I guess, 6 months later, they got summoned, and, you know,
okay,
they...
Let me ask you this question to our attorney. Can we either postpone or table and try to bring these two individuals together? I don't want to see a guy take a sledgehammer to concrete. It seems like for 6 months it was okay. Then our city people saw it.
But it wasn't okay.
And if he didn't get his permit, then none of this would have been done to begin with. That's why.
Is it just like the guy right over here that
I'll
we do it? Same thing.
But we made him take it down.
Everything down.
Yeah, we did.
Get the proper permit. And then make his various requests.
And D&D, though, they did approve the variance request, D&D did, with the caveat that if future demolition would be required to city improvements of utilities or easements related to those, that they would have to reimburse the city. Like, it wouldn't...
They issued a still on. They're still on somebody else's property.
It's the offset.
Wow.
Like I said, that's why I know it's already built, but I really believe that everybody needs to go in with the mindset that
if it
came
exactly
to you.
I wouldn't. I mean, I'm being honest with you, I wouldn't, but it's there, and so it's a quandary.
So it's there, so that means that some people are able to, or do come here, and we tell them no, but if somebody's already constructed it.
Tell them yes.
We tell them yes, because you already did it. So okay. then you just have...
Nope, I think...
Like I said, you're right, it is a quandary, and it's something that...
Right.
That's awkward, but at the same time, we're kind of saying if it's already built, then it's okay.
No, I think the King Solomon thing to do is we're not going to split the baby with the sword, okay? I think, honestly, that they need to remove it. I make a motion that we deny
wait,
the
wait, wait, hold on.
Oh.
So it's just the carport was...
Whatever Officer Thompson found in violation needs to be done.
Correct.
Well, the post,
there was two, yeah.
The post from the carport is all the way to the...
Well, then that's a problem. That's,
mm-hmm.
Look, here's the thing, folks. We talked to Big Boy about playing by the rules, did we not? I mean, I'm the one exactly that said that.
I'm the one who brought that up. That's what I was asking.
And what I'm saying is, so this is exactly the same thing as playing by the rules. And it's just like as a police officer, when I stop somebody and they go, I didn't see the sign, well, that's not the way it is.
I mean,
so they know they should have come in the first place. They need to rectify it, whatever it takes.
I was wondering if last time that we were here, was the motion here, or if they were like, you know, if they would take care of what needed to take care of at some point, if the city has to do something like that, maybe. But
I was wondering if,
like, there's another way. Maybe they can pay a fine or...
But here's the thing, ma'am. Just to address you real quick. No.
No.
Because what it is our officer found this to be out of compliance. Okay? And since our officer found it, that's a violation. That's now addressed. And truthfully, the only person that can pull anything would be the officer.
Okay.
We can't even make, except we're making the decision that needs to be rectified. And that's what I want to make the motion.
Monique, what were you going to say?
So I was going to say, if it fails, then it's two things, the carport and the driveway extension.
Right.
So we both have to.
Whatever.
Right.
To
that's
rectify.
What
yes.
I was saying, yes.
My
right.
other question was going to be for Mr. Strong, that I see that, you know, P&Z had this caveat in there, but does council even have the ability to put that in there when we're in an approved variance request?
Probably yes. But we may not need to get to that point.
I don't think so. No, I think it's just like anything else. If we're going to hold businesses or anyone else to the rules, then we're going to hold everybody to the rules. So
So that if our officer discovered it's a violation of a city ordinance, then it has to be enforced.
Mayor, if I may comment one thing, mild disagreement with something Mr. Grant said with respect.
That's fine.
And that is that if this item is not removed within a reasonable time, then the code compliance officer can issue a citation.
Correct.
And under our ordinances, each day a violation is in place is a separate violation.
Right.
So it's in the property owner's best economic interest to remove something like this or be continually faced with municipal court citation.
Well, I agree with you, sir.
But so as a practical matter, what Mr. Grant said is correct, but there is an exception for someone who has a very deep pocket and wants to pay whatever fine the municipal court
judge assesses
for these violations.
Yes, you're right. We went through this with another person. I can remember that. You're correct. What would you say the common sense thing would be?
But you have a motion, correct?
Right.
Your motion was to remove?
Yes.
To
rectify the driveway.
To rectify it back
to what it needs to be. Yes.
I'll second that while we're at it.
All right, so there's a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar. So if anybody else wants to... No.
To deny.
Mm-hmm.
I can try for Jim. Can you go up there, or can I say it right here?
Oh, you can say it.
I'm a member.
The open public is over with.
So, Mayor, in a situation like this, if the council wants to not reopen the public hearing but allow this neighbor to speak, it would require a majority vote of the council, basically changing the rules of order for the council. So if there is a majority of the council that wants to hear what this neighbor has to say, you can ask if anyone wants to make a motion to permit this person to speak. If it's seconded, and then there can be a vote on it. Again, it needs a majority to pass.
So this is while a motion has already been made and seconded?
Well, this is an exception to all the rules, Mr. Pearson. It's done in other cities this way, and I don't want to eliminate the possibility. It's all discretionary with the governing body.
One day I'll actually get to say something, but if you want to allow this resident to speak, somebody can make a motion for that.
I make a motion that we hear what she has to say.
Do I need to come up here?
Yes, ma'am,
please.
Yeah.
Oh, wait,
hold
up.
That's fine. If you, that's fine.
You have a motion and a second.
Correct.
To allow this person to speak, we do need to have a vote on that motion.
Who seconded?
They both. Yeah. You can give it to Jerry.
For the vote. Councilmember Upperton?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. You may come to the podium, please, and state your name for the record.
My name is Sandra Gray, and I live at 5130 Cinderella, and I know Maria and her husband fairly well. We've become friends. And first of all, I have a question. I don't think I've heard it. I heard people talking about in our neighborhood is why it took. I've been in Kirby 31 years, and I know the ropes and everything about the permits and stuff. Why did it take 6 months? This gentleman, if you saw him and the work he did, and it was summertime, and he was always out there. And my question is, why did it take so long for him, for them to come and serve him? That's the first question. I mean, I know I've been in Kirby, like I said, 31 years, 89, well, before that, 85. And I don't see him as much anymore. I don't see code compliance a lot. I know there's a lot of shortage, I hear, in that department and the police, but I don't see the police that much anymore. And that is my question. I don't know if that can be answered.
I can't answer.
But I don't think that's right. I mean, you know, we know business is business, but that's the first one. And I just want to say Maria and her husband have been nothing but just top neighbors. They keep everything clean and nice. They appreciate what they have. And they're not from here, you know, they're from Mexico, and they didn't understand. They didn't understand about the code compliance. That's the way I understood it. And so I'm here just to support them and want to say I'm a little bit upset by this. And I mean, you know, and I also want to say that the gentleman that called, I know him personally, and I went, Virginia didn't know him, Virginia Salinas that lives across the street from me. She asked me, will you go with me and we'll talk to him to make sure, because Maria and them talked to him and he was fine. And that was the day after, you know, last week when we did the zoning. And he was fine with it. And he says, man, the guy did an excellent job. So something doesn't quite jive here. And I'm just saying, I'm being honest with you.
And that's fine, because actually I believe that what was talked about other than that piece, it really isn't the homeowner's opposition at this point now.
Mm-hmm. But all these great neighbors and nobody told them to go to the city to get a permit?
Well, it doesn't fall on the city. Fortunately, the city did find it, but it's their responsibility to get the permit. And if they're going to encroach on the easement, it's their responsibility to let us know.
But they didn't know it. I'm sorry. Well, I'm just stating ignorance. What I know.
Ignorance. We're not going to go back and forth. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
All right. So there is a motion and a second. Oh, sorry. Yes. City Secretary, please call roll.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
No.
Councilmember Salazar?
No.
Councilmember Akabakan?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
No.
Mayor Pierce, yes.
The motion that Mr. Grant made
was
failed because it did not get
four votes. Correct.
Okay.
It did.
I heard Grant no, Layman no, Salazar no, Abadaka yes, Pierce no, Mayor yes.
Correct.
I count 3-3.
Correct.
Can I make a comment?
Nothing passed. So the motion to remove did not pass. So your motion to take it back to the ordinance spec did not pass.
Correct. But that doesn't stop code compliance from going after and citing the situation.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
Nor does it prevent someone else on the governing body to make another motion right now.
And it would be better going that route.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
Are you giving him approval?
Oh, I'm just.
Do you want to sit here?
No, dear.
2021.
No. I'm good. I'm sorry, Mayor. I apologize to you. I got lost a bit.
You know, we've had this time and time again. I'll admit, people come by and they say, well, I didn't know that I didn't have to have a permit and all this stuff. Well, that's not our fault.
Right.
That's your fault.
Right.
But where is our code compliance?
We're not going to discuss code compliance.
Well,
that's a whole other discussion. I'm sorry, but it's not relevant to this piece.
It's the same thing. Our police officers go up and down the streets day in and day out, and if they see this project going on.
Do you want to make a motion to this? We can't have this discussion because that's not about what's on here.
I don't think he understood what the motion the councilman brought up. Well, I don't know if you want to bring up that.
Well, what I was going to say is this. We all know that you cannot direct an officer to do something, okay? And now that I've listened to exactly what was said, it truly is a city manner. I don't even think we should even bother with it because we have the official and the person to handle the situation as need be. Would that not be correct, Chief? If the officer discovered it on site, then the officer has the right to act. Would that be correct?
Right.
And that's it. That's done deal. Let the city handle it. We don't have to get into it.
Is variance granted or not? What I wanted to say. It came to us, and we approved it.
Right. But it's up to us to take the action.
You're recommending. You're recommending it.
But yeah, with all the discussion we had, and all the questions we asked, we didn't see a problem. I do understand it if it goes into the other person's house. Yes, cut it off. But if they're willing to accept that if there's any...
The difference is, sir, is that it's not in your hands or ours anymore. It is a violation that an officer of the city has discovered, and it's up to the city to handle it.
And are we talking about the city police or the city
government? Yes,
anybody?
City officer.
All right. We already had a motion and a vote. We already had a motion on a vote, so.
Move on.
Is there any other, does anybody else want to make a motion on this item?
When the Planning and Zoning Commission makes a recommendation, does it not take a 75% vote of council to override that recommendation of planning and zoning? If so, it would take 6 votes of council to override that planning and zoning recommendation. And I bring this point of order up also because earlier on, when planning and zoning recommended for the other property, it was a 50-50 vote, basically voting against.
No,
what planning and zoning had recommended on the earlier item, and that is per city charter.
And Mayor, I would need to look at the city zoning code and the charter and the local government code to respond to this point of order. I would respectfully ask that you recess the meeting for about 5 minutes so I can do that in Ms. Vernon's office.
Well, may I ask you a question, sir, if we could? That still, no matter what we decide as far as that goes, that still doesn't take the authority away from the city officer to enforce that ordinance.
That is correct, and it still does not, it also, notwithstanding the point of order, it takes action by the governing body. A vote, a 3-3 vote by the governing body takes no action.
Correct.
And even if Mr. Romans is correct, which I'm not conceding because I have not looked at it, that does not mean that the city council, by non-acting, has approved the Zoning Commission's recommendation. The cities that I'm familiar with, the requirement that it takes a supermajority vote of the governing body to overrule a denial by a zoning commission,
right,
not a supermajority vote of the city council to decline to approve an action by the zoning commission. But before I can render an opinion, I want to look at the Kirby chapter, I think it's 153,
mm-hmm.
and the local government chapter 211 to make sure that I interpret the city's rules correctly.
All right, we will take a 10-minute recess. 9:04.
I love that gift. I love that gift. Don't hurt me.
It's 9:16. We will reconvene the regular meeting.
Shoot, little Herman, they're riding shipping.
All right. I will turn this over to our lawyer, Mark Schnall.
for a clarification on an item.
Mayor, the ruling on the point of order is that it's denied because the city zoning ordinance, section 153.1616, 153.116 sub B sub 5 says, a vote of 3/4 of all the members of the city council is also required to overrule a recommendation of the zoning commission that the proposed amendment, supplement, or change be denied. Therefore, it did not require a vote of 6 in order to not do what the zoning commission to deny. The zoning commission did not deny this application for this variance, and therefore it did not require a supermajority of the governing body under the wording of 153.116. So that is the ruling. I believe the last item that came before that comment was your statement to the governing body asking if anyone on the governing body wished to make another motion under item 8C.
Correct.
May I ask, Bart? Where we are right now with what we've talked about, if it is now a city situation with a city officer handling it, do we need to take any further action?
No.
That's what I thought. So it just rests as it is, and it's up to the city.
Okay.
This item comes from the Zoning Commission with a recommendation. There's no requirement that the governing body take action tonight, but until the governing body takes action on that recommendation, it remains open. So if the governing body decides not to take any action tonight that passes by the required vote, then it would be my recommendation to the city manager and the city secretary that this item be on the agenda for the next regular council meeting.
Okay, you want to try this again? Can I get it right this time? Make a motion? I'm trying to think of how to word it.
Okay, the last motion...
We deny the variance.
The last motion was to deny the variance and for the homeowner to make the the driveway and the carport back to code.
That's my motion.
That's your motion.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll second it.
That was the same motion that died.
That failed to pass.
I mean, that failed to pass, yes. Sorry.
Well, what is the motion to make there?
All right, so there's a motion where you're re-motioning that.
Yes.
There's a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to deny the variance to the zoning ordinance.
I don't know how to say it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure there was another comment. All right. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant.
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman.
No.
Councilmember Salazar.
Yes.
Councilmember Atadaka.
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce.
No.
Mayor Pierce.
Yes.
Or yes, two no.
You got that? Okay. Now we're moving to item 8D, update, discussion, and possible action on Ben Zingelman Road reconstruction project. We have Mark Hill.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. The status of Ben Zingelman. We are in phase 4. The majority of the concrete has been installed. The plan is to install the surface of asphalt on the 27th. This will set them at 48% complete monetarily, 147% of time.
That's 3 to 1.
So it would be, this would set them at 48% complete with the money.
At 140%.
About 147%, yeah. So, they're, okay. In other words, they're over.
Yeah, we're moving right along.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've been, liquidated damages are being assessed monthly. The current schedule shows completion May 31st.
Of this phase.
Of this year.
Of 2020.
But of phase four.
No, current completion of phase 7 by May 31st. There are 7 phases, so that would be the
correct
end of the project.
So they're expecting that they're going to finish all the way to Benzingelman by May 31st.
To the bridge.
All the way
to the bridge.
Sorry, to
yes,
the
ma'am.
Ship part.
Yes, ma'am.
Really?
That's the current schedule.
So did they? Were they able to get the fire hydrant in?
When I was out there last, they were scheduled to do it.
Mike?
Did they get that fire hydrant in?
The hydrant, yes. The
at Crest?
The one that, yes.
Yeah.
At the corner of Benzingelman and Crest?
Yes.
Oh, the one they painted red.
And it's operational now?
The hydrant there, I'm not exactly sure if it's operational. It's not like bags or anything, but all the others are coming in.
Does our fire department know if it's operational?
Yeah, we'll verify that it's been tested and it's ready for service. That would be part of the testing. Yeah, that would be part of the testing.
So when do they expect to go to the next phase? Not the completion phase, but...
Currently, they want to, if they can finish the asphalt and the last bit of sidewalk, they would like to set up and activate detours at the end of next week by the 31st.
So I'm assuming the pavement that's left is the offset that's between what's there now and the top of that little curb thing?
Yeah, it's the final course, yes, sir.
And the mess they made there right at Fred Hayes, that actually is on Fred Hayes, they're going to take care of that, the potholes and everything?
To the curb return as part of the project, we were talking about the potholes that are in front of the driveway right next to that curb return, and we're going to request that they add some asphalt into those potholes.
So we kind of dug them out a little bit.
Yeah.
So when are we going to ask that they do that?
What's that?
When are we going to
that
ask?
Tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning we're going to meet and walk the site.
Well, could I ask you just one more thing? Would you ask them to please pick up their trash? The lunch, the Coke cans, and everything else. I'll put my garbage can out there if they'll just use it. I don't care.
You won't put your garbage can out there. No.
Mayor, I mean, it's to the point of my neighbors. I mean, we got soda cans. We got...
Understand, but
now they need to clean up their site.
Correct.
I mean, it's just for everybody.
Yeah.
So by the end of next week, then the 31st, they're projected to request at the next council meeting to go into phase, the next phase.
So by the end of this week, they should have asphalt done, and. They will be requesting to go to phase 5.
At our next council meeting.
That'll be passed.
Right.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
So that's, if we make them wait until next council meeting, I mean, we're causing the obstruction
right
to the progress
say,
of
the
project.
No, we haven't caused any problems. They should already be done. So I just want to make that clear.
I know what you're saying, but I mean, we don't want to.
Mayor, I agree with you 110%.
So, all right. So then, city staff will be involved in that process and won't let them move forward unless those pieces are in place.
Yes.
Mike.
received a complaint from one resident who sent me video that they were using their water.
Yep.
And they have a meter that they're paying the city for, so they should not be using anyone's water. I mean, she had lots of video that she sent me.
Yep.
And Monday was the city holiday. I provided them with the 2020 holiday schedule, and they had foolproof 20 people out there Monday morning that we had to stop work on. We stopped work, but they were in violation of the contract. So we just reiterate that.
We do have a list of resident concerns that we're going to go with them, put them out of the web, and then email contact with them to let them know some of the things that are going on. So we're going to be on top of that and make sure that all the issues brought up here in trash and anything like that, we'll make sure that we hammer the issues with them and make sure that we get these things resolved. You can't have a resident. That's one of the things we're trying to do here.
Maybe we need a church babysitter service.
Do you think they'll ask for additional, like, weekends before in order to enhance to help them move along?
If they do, we've let them know that that has to come to council.
I know. I'm just asking if you think that, they've done it.
I think they should. I think that they should make every effort that they can to get this done. He has made a request whether or not he can do... if they finish phase four, if they can do phase five and phase seven. Phase seven is the side near the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They are two different types of crews. One would be a concrete crew running on phase five, doing the sidewalks and curb. The other is a pavement crew doing the excavation and the pavement on phase seven. I recommended that if he wants that, then he needs to come here and explain that to the city council.
And the subcontractors, are they being paid as far as to show up? Because I know that...
Bring his prompt pays, yes,
and
ma'am.
Their foreman is still the same person that just the recent new foreman?
No.
No?
He's
Is
gone.
That their new one?
Okay. Yes. They've had some personnel turnover. Yes,
you think?
All right. Does anybody else have any questions? All right. Thank you, Mark. All right. Moving on. All right. Item 8E, discussion and possible action on appointing a member to the Beautification and Recycle Committee. There is currently one vacancy. I do not have any applications. All right. So unless council has a nomination, we will move forward. All right. Item 8F, discussion and possible action on appointing alternate members to the Buildings and Standards Commission. There are currently three alternate vacancies there. I do not have anything in front of me for that. Patty?
Okay. Nope.
Item 8G, discussion and possible action on appointing members to the Kirby Senior Center Corporation Board. I do have one. Mr. David Barbosa had submitted his application to the Senior Center Board, and they granted his appointment at Tuesday's meeting unanimously, so I will entertain a motion for Mr. Barbosa.
I make the motion to accept Mr. Barbosa to the Senior Center Board.
I have a motion by Councilmember Grant.
Can I say something? His application, I'm all for it, but his application, he was not very thorough. I think that he needs to go back and fill in some more details. But
is this the proper city application?
That's the Senior Center has their own.
Okay, but for us to do make our call up here would be last.
No, it's theirs.
Just off of there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did discuss this gentleman with the board president, and they vetted him and sent him forward.
He's currently volunteering at many of their different events.
I understand what you're saying.
Well, I mean, we're welcome to have him. It's a good thing, but I'm just saying that he just left a lot of blanks on here.
You're correct.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca, to appoint Mr. David Barbosa to the
Kirby Senior Center Corporation Board. Any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Reagan?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes.
All right.
Capture another one.
No, he's not here. So that puts our senior center board at 8 members. They have 1 vacancy. If anybody is interested, please contact either their president, Sid Sanders, or their center manager, Norma. All right. I'm going to deviate.
What?
Let me see, first of all. No, maybe I'm not. Actually, let me just keep going since our lawyer's here. We're going to item 8H, discussion and possible action on potential amendments to ordinance number O-2018-847, revising sections 50.10 through 50.20 of the Code of Ordinances, including a revision to the sewer service charges and providing for a penalty not less than $1 nor more than $200, and each violation shall constitute a separate offense. That something that we can contact, go back into SAWS to ask? I know that I had conversation with you because of things that I had seen on social media and also on a CPS blog. And so is that something that we'll be able to go back to them and say, I think it's ridiculous kind of thing?
Yes.
All right. All right, so you propose that we table this, or do you want us to postpone it?
If we can postpone it to the second meeting in February,
okay.
We'll have all the information by then.
All right, so after hearing our city manager, if somebody would like to make a motion to postpone to our second meeting.
Mayor, I make a motion that we postpone this to the second meeting in February.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to postpone this agenda item until the second meeting in February. Is there any discussion? Oh, yes, I can. Sorry. Is there any discussion? Our city secretary, please call roll.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. And I would ask that if anybody goes through that and sees any other changes or things that they want to be brought, please let our city staff know so they can have it all complete at that meeting. All right, item 8I, discussion and possible action on ordinance number 2019-865, repealing existing Chapter 91 of the Code of Ordinances and adopting a new Chapter 91 entitled Animals to set out provisions as to animals, including an animal shelter, animal control officers, microchipping, animal bites and animal care, spaying and neutering, rabies control, adoption of animals, fees, enforcement, and related matters, and setting a fine not to exceed the amount set out in Section 10.99 of the Code of Ordinances for each violation. This is the first reading. There was quite a bit of information with quite a bit of changes. I don't know if everybody's had,
I think we pretty well discussed it, yeah.
We have, but there's still some things that there's still quite a few things that I think need to be addressed. Yeah. Go ahead,
Okay. Just a couple things that are different. You received a clean copy. The one that was in the packet had track changes. The clean copy that you received, a couple of things that were added to that. So there was, throughout the document, It was proposed to change from control officer to animal services officer. And we do need to leave that as animal control officer because that is the certification level that they get from the state. So
that was one.
Put that back in.
Okay.
Also, if you look at Article 3, it needs to read microchipping / permits. And what I looked at is the actual full language from the city of San Antonio. It's just a little more detailed verbiage than what we had in there about how the microchipping will work. So our current ordinance has a licensing program that has to be renewed annually. So the recommendation would be to change it to microchip required. And then also they have a section in their ordinance that we had not proposed to put in there initially about maintaining your current microchip registration. So you technically don't have to come back to the city for a license every year, but it's just telling you how to update your information with an appropriate microchip registration organization. So it's just a little more detail about how a person can do that. And then going with that, on the last page where our fee schedule was listed, back in July of 2019, we went over all of our fees, but it did not list the cost for microchipping. We do it in-house, so we added a $10 fee for in-house microchipping.
It doesn't have to be, somebody doesn't have to use the city in order to microchip.
You can try it as long as it's registered.
Correct. If they would like to, we would offer that.
It's a lot cheaper with us.
For them.
City of San Antonio has it for $5.
Yeah, but they we don't want to give them $5.
No, I'm just saying.
Easy, Coach.
And then there were just a couple of other places that, if you remember, we were joint with the county. The term of the building was facility versus shelter, but we went back in and used the term shelter throughout the document.
Since we have a cleaner copy and there's not this, I'd still like council to be able to take it back and review it all and then have it come back to at our very next meeting.
Okay.
So that everybody has a chance to read it in the same copy. And then, again, if you see something that needs changed, we can send it, if you can send it to the city manager, that way she can have those proposed changes for everybody to review.
I think you've done a pretty good job of putting it together.
So I will entertain a motion to table to our next meeting.
Mayor, make a motion to table to the next meeting.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to table ordinance number O-2019-865 to the next meeting. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Abadaga?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. So please take that and read it. And again, any changes or concerns, please let our city staff know. Item J, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2019-866, amending sections 150.15, 150.16, 150.27, 150.28, 150.32, 150.33, and 150.35 of the city's code of ordinance relating to building mechanical plumbing, existing building performance and fuel gas codes, and adding sections 150.37, 150.38, and 150.39 relating to 2018 International Fire Code, 2018 International Swimming Pool and Spa Code, and 2018 International Green Construction Code to the city's code of ordinances to adopt certain 2018 international codes and standards establishing certain building code and building-related regulations and requirements and establishing a penalty of a fine of not less than $500 nor more than $2,000 for violations with each day a violation occurs, constituting a separate offense. This is the first reading. I will turn this over to our attorney, Mark Schnall.
And Mayor, this is an item that was originally presented, I believe, at the September council meeting. And at that time, the council directed staff to go back to the heads, including especially the fire chief and the fire marshal, to see if there were any additional local amendments that department heads did want incorporated into the city's adoption of the updated 2018 code. The fire marshal has requested that the local amendments adopted in 2015 concerning sprinklers be local amendments to the 2018 building code. And Ms. Vernon and I had an opportunity to discuss this morning, and so this afternoon I did update the draft ordinance. So I believe the updated ordinance, which now includes the incorporation of the local amendments, which begin, the new local amendments concerning the sprinklers begin at item C on page 2 of the revised ordinance that I believe was set out for the council members and continues to most of page 3. This is taken basically word for word from the current building code adopted by the city council, I believe in 2015. I might be off on that day. As members of the council may recall, there has been some concern by property owners about the square footage requirement for sprinkler systems in non-residential or non-single family residential uses, which is 500 square feet, and in multifamily units more than 5,000 square feet, anything above those amounts would require a sprinkler. Council may want to look at that number. The building code has adopted the International Building Code, I believe, has a 25,000 square foot minimum requirement before a sprinkler system is required. But Kirby has had this lower amount for at least since 2015 and probably before that. There are a series of exceptions where that rule does not apply. They begin at the very last part of page 2 and the first half of page 3. There's some different rules under retrofit. Again, these are all the same rules that are currently in place under the current building code. The legislature did adopt House Bill 2439, which restricts the ability of a local government to adopt a local amendment in regard to building products or material. It is not clear whether sprinkler systems are part of that definition. I don't consider a sprinkler system to be a building material or really a building product. I view it as an add-on and as a safety feature as opposed to a building material or building product, but there is no case law, there's no court decision, there's no definition in this new House bill that would clarify for any of us. So what Ms. Vernon and I, you know, felt was the appropriate thing to do was to bring forward to the governing body the recommendation from the city's fire marshal, the expert on fire safety to some extent, that the council could decide whether to adopt the same language in this new section of code as has been in place at least since 2015, or to modify those square foot requirements. So the only change I would suggest the council might consider is whether or not the 500 square feet, any building over 500 square feet other than an apartment, which has the minimum of 5,000 square feet, whether that 500 square feet number might be something that the governing body wants to look at. We did have, I think, one or two instances where the council denied variances to buildings and did require the owners to obtain a sprinkler system. In one instance where a variance was granted, on the basis that the facility was a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, never-closing facility, so that it always had employees present, and therefore that, in the fire marshal's view, negated the need for sprinkler systems because the building was occupied 24/7. But that is the only change from what the council had before it at the September meeting. And the council's deferral of action at that time, as I recall, was specifically to allow Ms. Vernon to go back to the department heads, the fire chief, the fire marshal, the police chief, the public works director, and confirm whether they wanted any local amendments. And the only local amendments that we were asked to put in were this matter about sprinklers I discussed.
And that is one of the things. I understand that it says 500 square feet, and I understand that that's our fire marshal's recommendation. I just think that if there is any construction or any businesses, that kind of prohibits those businesses from coming in, just for the fact that we would always be granting variances or at least have them in front of us to review. And that, I think, is if we can make it something where it's workable, that they don't have the need to come. There was a gentleman, if y'all recall, that would had a plumbing business, and he wanted, and it was not very big at all, but obviously it was over 500 square feet, and the variance wasn't granted, and I understand that because that is what our code is, but I just think that 500 square feet for a constructed building is a little tight. That's just my opinion. I don't know if we go half in 2,500 square feet. I don't know. Charlie, is there a specific reason? Do you know why?
No, ma'am. Other than they were just continuing the amendment that was passed. You know, like Tom said, you know, 2015. He was just continuing to. He felt that it was a public safety thing. I myself kind of feel as you do. But I don't consider myself fire marshal expert-wise to make that judgment.
Well, clearly I'm not.
Right, so I go on his recommendation. I offer that to y'all. But I'm kind of in the same, you know, feeling that you are. I've discussed this with the city manager. We've gone, you know, over this several times. And kind of all of us are kind of like in that type of agreement. But he is the expert in it. I'm bringing to you his recommendation. That's why you had that before you met.
Well, just out of curiosity, the person that you're insured has a lot to do with what they require to insure your building. And do you know what the standard is? If we ever look to see what the standard is with an insurance company or an insurer?
No, I don't know what the standard is. I'm going on the.
I know that. Yeah, I got that. Yeah, I wonder if that's what he's doing.
No, what I'm saying is the International Building Code itself has 5,000 square foot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. To me, that's an expert group as well. And I just don't, to me.
The fire marshal recommends.
The fire marshal says to stay with 500 square feet. And I just think if we have any businesses coming in, they're going to be over 500 square feet.
I would hope so.
Well, and then that means that they're going to have to go to P&Z for variance, and then we have all these variances, and then we have to mark the variance so that when that person moves, and the city staff has to keep up with the variance. I just think it makes it difficult if somebody wants to come, because clearly they're not going, most of them will not, they'll just end up going elsewhere because they can't afford a $20,000 sprinkler system or better for.
Where are we going to set it at, about 20 or about 2?
That's up to you. Like I said, the International Building Code is 5,000. I thought if we possibly go in the middle of that, 2,500, I don't know. I just think that 500 is too small.
2,500.
That's just my personal opinion. And again, I'm definitely not an expert in
2,500 square feet is a pretty good sized building. So, yeah. I mean, 500 square, it's like nothing. That's a garage.
That's what I mean. It's very small. Like I said, the gentleman that had the plumbing, he was going to fix the building up over by Seguin, and it was denied, and he obviously hasn't moved forward because
that $20,000 or whatever that expense is, I'm sure is quite more costly than his business setup itself. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, somewhere between 2,000 square feet. It's a pretty good sized building. We should be able to hit the middle there somewhere and agree on that.
Well, like I said, the international fire code is 5,000. So I mean, again, that's just my personal feeling. I mean, if council.
That's what I was saying, about 2,000.
Yeah, about 2,000, 2,500. 2,500 works.
So, Mayor, the one approach would be for a member of the governing body, if they were so inclined, to make a motion to adopt Ordinance 0-2019-866 with changing the number 500 to the number 2,500, for example, in Section 150.16C1. And then see if that motion gets a second and can be voted on. That would be consistent with the discussion that we just had.
150.16(1).
150.16, subsection C1.
You know, it's like going to school again. All right, we're going to try this one time. I'd like to make a motion that we change the 500 square feet requirement under subsections 150-16, subsection C1, to 2,500 square feet.
And can you add then and adopt the ordinance?
I didn't get the ordinance.
0-2019-866.
66, yeah. Because it covered so many, I got lost. For ordinance number 0-2019-866.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to accept ordinance number 0-2019-866. With changing of the 500 square feet to 2,500 square feet in section 150.16, subsection C1. Is there any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember
Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Ordinance number 0-2019-866 with the changes of 500 to 2,500 square feet in sections 150.16C, subsection 16C1. Sorry, 150.16, subsection C1 passes for the first reading.
You're sure?
Item K.
Get all them amendments.
Discussion and possible action on amendment to section 150.86, barbed wire prohibited, of chapter 150, building regulations of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Kirby. No, sorry. Prohibited of chapter 150, building regulations, Code of Ordinances of the City of Kirby, to amend provision regarding barbed wire fences of ordinance number 0-2005-611.
This is talking about whether it faces in or out, right? Because right now it has to face in, and it really should face out.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be correct?
So, our current ordinance reads that it shall be unlawful for any person to erect or cause to be erected on any street or property within the city any fence composed either wholly or in part of barbed wire, unless the use of such barbed wire is restricted to placing of not more than 3 strands thereof at the top of any fence over 6 feet in height, provided such strands slant away from the street or adjoining property and toward the property, such fence may be bound. So
towards the street, right?
No, away from it. Towards
the
street.
Yes. Our current,
towards the street.
Well, the current ordinance says that it should be slanted
towards
the property, away from the street. The proposed ordinance that we're actually recommending is changing that so that it looks different in face toward the street.
Correct.
And a couple of reasons for that was we did a little bit of research based on some concerns expressed about driving around and, you know, our park compliance put together a list of various properties that are already existing businesses that are standing toward the street. So they are currently actually in violation. We held off on enforcing those at the time and did some additional research to see what cities around our area had in place. We found that Live Oak, Converse, Selma, Winfrey, and Castle Hills had no ordinance. Cibolo's, Faith, Outside, Universal City, didn't regulate barbed wire fences at all. They don't allow that material. Instead, unless there were electronically charged for certain types of property. And then we even noticed that we have city facilities like our
yes.
public works yard and the John Sterling that would actually also be facing outward as well. We did get cost estimates to see what it would cost to change those. So it was about $4,500 each fence to flip them around to put them in compliance. And then we looked at TCEQ requirements, which says they have to face outward around the wells. So we, even if we were to keep the existing ordinance and decide to enforce that as it's written, we would still have to leave our well site as is. So just in looking at the whole purpose of it is to keep people out of your property. So staff actually is recommending that we change the ordinance so that they do slant out, that that be in compliance versus slanting in, because the idea is that you don't want them to get in. Currently, they can get over the fence and inside, and then they may get trapped in there, but again, they're already in.
So what does that, for the businesses that actually followed our ordinance, what does that mean for them?
We could give them a certain period of time to bring them into compliance.
Right.
But there would still be a cost for them.
Yes, it would.
See,
I have an
issue with that. The fact that, I mean, the fact that we're asking them to change something when they, in due diligence, actually looked at the ordinance and did it correctly, because that's the way that it was written.
Yes, but the barbed wire is the way it's designed is for security, is to keep them out. Not
I understand that, but they may have thought the same thing. But there are clearly some businesses who looked at our ordinance and actually did exactly.
So
my concern is that their cost, they have an expense now.
Well, if we deny it, then it's going to the ones that have it the other way are going to cost them. So somebody's going to pay one side and the other.
Can we make an ordinance that business changes hands, being sold or whatever, at that time,
it passes on.
Correct.
So we grandfather those, and when it passes on, then they change.
We have a list of those businesses now, correct?
All right, yeah,
because
just grandfather.
Because y'all went around and marked them down.
Yeah.
That's a 6-foot requirement before the three strands of barbed wire.
Correct.
Like I said, my concern is just the fact that, because if it was that expense to the city to do that, then clearly that's a business that, in good faith, did exactly what they were supposed to do.
Well, then we make a motion with the caveat that when it passes on, that their grandfathered, if it passes on, then you have to come into compliance. Would that be correct?
I can't make a motion.
Well, no, I'm just asking. I'm asking, would that be correct?
Oh, yes.
That would be the correct.
Yeah, Mr. Grant is correct. That there really are three alternatives right now. One is to do nothing tonight and send this back to staff to write something for this ordinance. Another is to pass it as it's written and come back the next time. Or this is just first reading. Is this on first reading?
Yes.
So, and the third part, which I think is what probably makes the most sense, is to, again, do an amendment that provides that existing barbed wire fences are grandfathered until the property on which the fence is located changes ownership.
Do those addresses have to be listed in the ordinance?
I don't think so.
I think if the city has a list of the properties in question, reference could be made to the list maintained in the office of the city secretary.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm just saying because people
yeah, you're
might
right.
change hands.
You're right.
So if it's something to reference to, if somebody doesn't know where that form is, it may make for a later on down the road.
So here we go. Mayor, make a motion that we accept the ordinance with a caveat that all the businesses that have fixed their fence, I can't even think of what I want to say, I'm getting tired, that who are
or in compliance with the existing ordinance, be grandfathered until the business passes on. Would that be correct, sir?
I'm concerned about the phrase business passes on because that's subject to a number of interpretations.
Okay, so what would I say?
And so this is a fence is an improvement to real property.
Correct.
So my theory would be, my suggestion would be that it's if the real property changes hands, at that point
they could come into compliance.
Must be placed in compliance, and you may want to say within 60 days of changing hands, something like that. If the property changes ownership, then within 60 days of the date of ownership change, the fence must be brought into compliance with the new rule.
Exactly what he said.
And then
no,
the city secretary will maintain a list of the properties that are subject to the grandfather.
Do you have that, Madam Secretary?
Yes, sir.
That is my motion. Thank you. Come on, man. Again?
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to accept the amendment to Section 150.86, Barbed Wire Prohibitive, Chapter 150, Building Regulations of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Kirby to amend provision regarding barbed wire fences of Ordinance Number 0-2005-611, amended that if the real property changes ownership, that within 60 days, the owner will
come into compliance.
Will come in compliance with the current code, and a list of addresses of those businesses will be maintained with the city secretary.
Oh, I did good.
Within what, 60 days?
Yeah, 60 days.
Any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. That amendment to Section 150.86 with the changes passes for the first reading. JKL. Item 8L, discussion on potential scooter and bicycle safety regulations. We have an ordinance in front of us, an existing ordinance. Chief?
Good evening. So at the last meeting, I was asked to do some research concerning bicycle and scooter safety, specifically safety equipment such as lights, reflectors, helmets, and their whether or not we should have them or enforcement issues with them. So I spent some time within the transportation code, specifically section 547, which talks about equipment in general, everything from headlights to clearance lights to reflectors and colors. And as I moved through that, I noticed that they are very specific on what type of vehicles are covered under that. They refer to everything from your standard automobiles, pickup trucks, heavy-duty industrial vehicles, pole trailers, and each class of vehicle has certain lighting and reflector requirements for safety at nighttime. The one thing I noticed is a very noticeable lack of references to motorized scooters over and above, or of any type of scooter. They are very specific on bicycles, motorcycles, the equipment that is required at night. Scooters are not mentioned in that, or motor-driven scooters, or manually driven scooters. That the only place that I really found where they specifically addressed those is, let me scroll down to my notes here a little bit. This is going to be section 551.351, specifically talks about motor-assisted scooters. And according to Texas law, They are required, or they are allowed to operate on roadways, pathways, hike and bike trails, and that sort of thing. As far as lighting and equipment, I could find no place in the transportation code where it says a scooter has to have a reflector, or has to have a headlight, or has to have turn signals, or anything of that nature. Now, the ordinance, or that particular set of laws, does go through and state that a county or municipality can ban them. So this governing body could create an ordinance that banned the use of scooters on roadways within the city as a whole. The one thing that I think that we should consider, if that is something that you guys want to consider, the motor assisted or motor driven scooters are really no more dangerous to operate on a public roadway after dark than would be a bicycle or a, if you have children or grandchildren in past years, you might have bought them for Christmas a little Razor type scooter, skateboards and all the rest of that. Each one of those items have to be operated with due diligence. You got to be aware of your surroundings, and that applies to scooters as well. So I'm not prepared to make a recommendation. I do know that within Kirby, since the rise in popularity of these type of devices, and I'm not going to call them vehicles because they're not really addressed as vehicles within the transportation code, these type of devices to get around, we in Kirby have not seen an influx. I know several months ago we created an ordinance that severely restricted commercial motorized scooters, okay? And to the best of my knowledge, we have not encountered one since enacting that particular ordinance. Right now, I have not heard of any complaints. Officers have not come across any situation from a safety standpoint that would require them to intervene. Hey, you should have done this, you should have done that. At this point here, I don't see it as a, from the enforcement standpoint, as a major issue that we are currently dealing with or expect to deal with in the future.
Well, since I was one, fine. I mean, that's just the answer. The one thing I was concerned with, somebody getting run over or hurt or hit, because they seem to be, to me, coming in, obviously, into being. I'm guessing the state will probably address some within the next year or so.
And that may very well. I do know that one of the businesses, and please don't quote me on this, I think it was a company called Lime, has made a decision to start pulling.
They did.
I did talk with the chief out in Leon Valley. They actually gave me the ordinance, which we ended up modifying to suit our needs. They have a big problem in that city, but Bandera Road if you've ever been out there, there's a lot of scooters on that major thoroughfare. It's heavily traveled, probably more so than anything that we have in this area. Definitely more so than everything we have within our city. So I guess if I was forced to make a recommendation or offer a recommendation at this time, I just don't think there is enough of these type of devices in our city to actually make it an issue where we need to address an ordinance or an amendment to any current ordinances.
I saw a ton of them out there at UTSA. They, my God, they're all over the place out there. And I was just concerned that, you know, we maybe looked into it and made sure that if we needed to do something, that what was available to us.
Yeah.
Well, so the current ordinance that we have right now says prohibit a motor-assisted scooters in the interest of safety, the operation of a motor-assisted scooter on a street, highway, or sidewalk in the city is prohibited.
I was about to ask the same thing because you specifically stated that we passed it for commercial.
Well, that was the main catalyst for looking at that.
When we talked about that, the whole pretense of the ordinance was absolutely because of the ones that were found on Kirby, right in front of the Kirby Baptist Church. There was tons of them.
Okay.
but it doesn't specifically say commercial in here.
Oh, no, ma'am.
That would be my concern.
No, ma'am. And the ordinance does fit within Section 551 where it says that we can do that. That place, that ordinance is in place. So as... Well, we're going to have to talk more about any scooter. Are we talking about specifically motor vehicles?
I'm concerned that it would be for recreational because, like I said, when we talked about this, it was, to me, the way I understood it, was specifically the companies that were...
I thought it was commercial myself. Yeah, you're
correct.
But like I said, there's
no... No, the key to what's prohibited is in not only what... Councilman Pierce said, which is accurate, is also in the definition of a motor-assisted scooter. So a scooter that a kid got for Christmas that is not electric or motorized is not prohibited.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
If it's got a motor like the ones that we see the proliferation of, whether it's at UTSA, or I see them whenever I go downtown and try and walk on the sidewalk, even though they're banned on the sidewalk, I'm always... affected by them when I'm walking on a sidewalk, when you walk on a downtown river walk where they're prohibited, people tell me to get out of their way if they want to move faster on their scooter. And they do not appreciate it when I say, you know, you can get a ticket for riding your scooter on the river walk. They just go faster. But our ordinance only prohibits the gas or electric motor type of scooter. So that may only be a commercial vehicle, or what we would call a commercial vehicle. But it's a combination of what's prohibited and the definition of a motor-assisted scooter, a self-propelled device with the list of five items that does not include a pocket bike or a mini motorbike. And if there's a recommendation to modify this, then you know, the chief or a member of the governing body can bring that to the attention of Ms. Vernon, and we will draft an ordinance to bring to the council to have you all consider whatever someone wants to consider.
I really don't
want to
take the...
Can you take that? You have residential. There is nothing that says residential or commercial.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Any scooter.
Yep.
And like I said, when we talked about this, because Sylvia was actually the one who brought it up, you know, my whole thing was somebody that was commercially using it, not somebody who used it, took it home, put it up, not in sight, then took it out, finished, took it home, what have you. So that's my that was when you specifically said commercial. That, like I said, since it doesn't say commercial or resident, that I just when I said yes to this ordinance, I was under the pretense that it was strictly commercial, not somebody who was.
Well, even with the resident, the ordinance the way it is written, I think it covers what we need it to cover. And perhaps maybe I misunderstood the request from council. I thought that the request was about safety equipment.
That's what
lights,
I was
talking about. Sirens.
Yeah,
okay,
when
yeah.
You said the word commercial, and so, I was like, well, when I was reading this, that's absolutely what it was. But when you said commercial, I was like, well, there's nothing in here that absolutely.
So if I'm understanding what you're saying, right now we've banned all the motor scooters.
Yeah, anything. Residential.
Well, that's not really fair. I mean, because if people buy their own personal, if they're willing to, you know, I wish we could set safety regulations ourselves.
You can.
We can.
You can under the traffic code.
Well, then why don't we consider that? Why don't we look at, look, I can't see taking them away.
Commercial prohibited.
Yeah.
That's
with the guys that we have here said if a resident wants to have one, then you put in some sort of, because again, I look at it like a motorcycle, bicycle. It's being motorized. If
right.
You're on a bike, and it's moving, and you're pedaling, that's motorized. You're the motor. So there should be certain guidelines with that being reflective material
yep.
or something on that that we need to have them for. If it's going to be used in the city of Kirby by a resident, reflective material based off of how a bike would be or anything else.
I agree.
Well, I think the bike needs a headlight at night and a reflective to 300 feet.
Well, the only thing I'm concerned with, I just don't want to get anybody run over. I don't care, and I don't want to take something away from somebody.
No.
For enjoyment, not only that,
in the same ordinance.
But since this is about scooter and bicycle safety, I don't know, can we discuss the ordinance or can we bring that just on something else?
It's a discussion about scooters and about bicycles and safety. This discussion is acceptable under the Open Meetings Act.
I just want to make sure.
But we can also make the rule, you know, if we're going to allow electrical or motorized or cyclists, you know, if you're going to be riding at night, then you need lights in the back and the front. And we can make that rule under the...
My concern is that...
Could we instruct staff to look into the table this?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the middle part.
If it's a bicycle, motorcycle, whatever, that has reflectors, everything for safety at night of the rider. Like a headlight. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's motorized, it should have a headlight and a taillight, for sure.
You can use that. But one thing I'd like to some time to look into is... I've never ridden one. I'm not really that familiar with them, but based on what little experience I do have, I would question whether there's even any place on the back of one of the scooters to put any type of reflector, because I think it's just a wheel back there.
The ones they have downtown now, every one of those are correct with lights and everything all the way around.
If they're motorized or electric, they're going to have room on them. Right. Now, if it's one that... you do manually, they may not have
it. It's just like we went through this a long time ago and had this little discussion about no parking signs at the school zone. And for the longest time, we just said no parking. So people would park, and then I pressed to have no standing, no stopping after we get a kid hit. And all I'm trying to do now is maybe get ahead of this and have the things in place that when they do become more popular, and they are, that we are on the head of the curve and we don't get somebody hurt. That's all I care about. It doesn't make any difference. You know, just common sense. If you're going to ride it at night, please have, I just don't want to see anybody hurt.
No, it won't be a problem at all. We can come up with recommendations, amendments to the current ordinance, and have that whichever meeting you choose to bring
it
back.
If you would like, for instance, just look at the ones that are downtown and the lights are on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more than enough. But, I mean, you know, an adult riding one rides on the right side of the road. They do the proper things mm-hmm. most of the time. Kids, they go everywhere. I mean, we could light them up in neon.
Mm-hmm.
But... if we can do anything at all to stop anyone from getting hurt, then I'd like to see it done if we can.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I'd like for it to specifically say commercial and not negate a resident from...
Yeah, we'll go do that.
But if we postpone it, I'd like to postpone it until Chief is able to do his due diligence since it's that piece of it.
Okay.
I don't know what
happened.
Well, that's what I said.
March. Would March be okay?
Second meeting February, first meeting in March. I will endeavor to have everything ready for you by whatever meeting y'all choose to.
How about we go for the first of March? Give me plenty of time.
Fine with me.
We need a motion, right?
No.
We can just go on, right?
No. You don't really need a motion at all because... we just need to tell staff because there's nothing there.
Next, the motion would be out of order because the agenda does not call for any.
I know, that's why I said we're not. Don't need a motion. I said that without you. All right, thank you, Chief.
Thank you so much, Chief.
All right, agenda M: discussion and possible action on Kirby Fire Department shift. I will turn this over to Assistant Chief and Tina, maybe.
Tina?
So, let me just
how did Tina get in this?
Background while Patty's getting the
Our current fire shift that we work with 24 on, 48 off, at the request of the department, we're asking to change the shift to 48 on, 96 off.
And would you let us know why council, why this even has to come to us?
Right. So our current personnel policies manual outlines work schedules for all employees. So there's a section for five administrative employees, a 40-hour work week employees, there's a section for fire, EMS, and a section for police. So if we were to make a change to that, it would require changing the personnel policy manual. We typically review and update the manual every beginning of the year. So we'll be doing that here soon anyway, so this would be an opportunity to go ahead and make those updates. If council approves that tonight, our plan is that we can make it effective February 10th. And they're going to show you an example and kind of explain how that would work, our pay cycle, and what it looks like from an hour standpoint. That'd be kind of hard to see. So I'll let Chief Hilburn go ahead and explain that portion.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. As Ms. Vernon was mentioning, our current schedule is 24 on, 48 hours off, or 2 days off. Currently, moving to a 48 or 2 days on, 96 hours off, or 4 days off, some of the staff would have more time with their family or friends. Excuse me. There'd be 60 times per year of having four consecutive days off instead of currently there's zero time you have 4 days off. There'd be less commute for some of the individuals that live out of town. We have a gentleman that lives in Nixon, as well as one that lives in Fredericksburg. So for their commute, being able to come in 1 day and work 2 days instead of 1 day, leave, off 2 days, come back. It saves on their commute. There'll be some less duplication of work during daily checks. So instead of checking the ventilation fan every morning, it would be checked every other day. So the first day they would check it, they already checked it on their second day, on their first day, so they wouldn't recheck it until the new shift comes on. With that, there would be less wear and tear on the equipment by not getting started every single day. It would improve morale with the gentlemen and ladies that work at the department. Some departments have shown a decrease in use of sick time with people not calling off as often by having the 4 days off. There are some cons to it. It does increase work hours or hours on duty instead of just being on 1 day or 24 hours. You would be on for 48, 2 days. And there is an increased risk of sleep deprivation or fatigue. However, the officers would be responsible for monitoring that and allowing some nap time if needed to combat that fatigue or sleep deprivation. As Ms. Vernon mentioned, we would want to start February 10th. As I'm going to show you here on the schedule, if you will, the top one is we would start a 24-hour on that first day on the 10th, and then on Tuesday we would start the 48. What that does is it allows for the same pay period to be the same. At the end of the pay cycle, you'd still have the two shifts that get the 120 hours and one shift that gets the 96 hours. And it still rotates the next pay period, one shift gets 96 and the other two would get the 120. It rotates. There's three pay periods on that sheet for you. The second one is if we start the 48 on the 10th and the first shift works the 48, at the end of the pay period or the 2 weeks there, one shift would have 144 hours and the other two shifts would have 96, which is different than what we are currently using right now. We have the current two shifts, 120, one shift 96. And then the rotation would continue, one shift would continue with having the 144, it just rotates, and then the other two shifts would be 96. So our recommendation is that starting on the 10th with the 24, and then on the 11th would be the first 48-hour shift, only to keep it the 120, 120, 96, which would be easier for payroll because it's already in existence.
And on one of the inquiries, there was one of the cities that one of their challenges also is that if somebody called in sick, because their chief only allowed them to work a certain amount of days, only 72 hours, is that something that chief that is in your parameter as well?
I believe that they went over that. I believe that Dina and Wayne went over that today with Michael, who they spoke with. So they have some further, I think probably okay. Tina would have some further information on that.
Okay. Tina, you want to explain what they said about the 72 hours? Okay. So, yes, we went to Live Oak Fire Department this morning and had a talk with the chief there. And they said that the 72 hours is the max that they would go on. And so what would happen if somebody called in sick, for example? They would pull somebody from the middle of the shift that's already been off and is not going to go back to work for, like, another couple of days. They would pull that person if they had to. Not make that person work 72 hours. If they had to pull, they would pull somebody from the middle. But if they do have to work or fill in, they would go no more than 72 hours.
And to touch base with that, Live Oak has been doing this 48-hour shift for about a year now. And only one time, and it just happened recently, that they've had one individual work that 72 hours. They've never in that year time had anybody go beyond that 48.
Who else is doing these hours?
City of Converse is already doing it. Shavner Park, Universal City, Bexar County ESD 10 is already doing it. Schertz has gone to it.
And all but one person was in favor of this change as well with the fire personnel. So how would their sick time work if somebody did call in sick? Would they still just be charged that one day?
Well, if this is what we talked about this morning as well, we wanted to know if somebody calls in sick, would they have to take off the 2 days, or does that fire department let them take off one day and come back to work the next day? So is our option what we want to do? And I think, personally, if they're just sick that one day and then come back the next day.
Well, I would hate that somebody would have to burn two.
Correct.
And it makes sense to just let them come back.
Right. I mean, that would be my concern, is that they would have to burn two when they're really only sick one.
Right. It could be like a 24-hour bug or something like that. Now, if somebody had a flu, you know, they would take off that 2 days, and then they would also have that 4 days off to, you know, get over the flu and hopefully be well enough to come back on that next, they call it tour, but shift,
right,
if we want to call it that.
I mean, it seems to me this is what most departments go ahead. It's normal. It's the norm now coming. And I think if you really look at it, it makes a lot of sense. It does.
Even this is what Chief Elbert said. They've been in it for a year, and just recently ran into
one time
problem. I mean,
yeah.
And they're all wanting this.
Can I add to this? The chief that we talked to this morning, he did say that it also helped with, retaining employees and something else. Recruiting and also reduction in overtime by going with this.
And he said that usually when he does interviews for new applicants, he said they'll go through the whole interview process and they'll ask, okay, do you have any questions? It's not about how much it pays or anything else. Is this a 48-96 ship?
Yep.
Everybody's asking that question.
And you know why, right? Because just like police officers on certain downtime, they go to a part-time job. Well, that gives them more time to do the side business or something else.
Well, I don't see a I don't see a downside to it, really and truly. I think
it's
the way to go.
Yeah, now we do want to point out there was the example they gave about part-time jobs. You want to share that with us?
Yes, ma'am. They did provide an example of having a part-time job. How Live Oak does it, excuse me, is if the employee comes into work after working a part-time job and is too tired to do their regular day on day one, they look at it, contemplate actions. But if they see a habit forming of that, then they pull the form that the employee has to fill out, giving them permission to work a part-time job, and then the city advises them they can no longer work a part-time job.
Right.
Because...
That's an employee policy.
Right.
Yes.
And we have right now our current policy,
yes,
we have outside employee.
Yep, same thing.
All right. Are there any other discussions for...
They all have plush mattresses, right? For sleeping?
They have mattresses. I won't say they're plush. I'll find out tonight.
Mayor, I make a motion that we accept the action on the Kirby Fire Department shift change.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Grant to change to a 48-96 off shift, effective February 10th, 2020. Any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Thank you on the behalf of the ladies and gentlemen at the fire department.
And thank you guys for your service. The employee guide, will you update that? And then the employees will get it back? Okay. All right, moving on to item N, discussion and possible action on resolution number R-2020-715, calling a general special election on May 2nd, 2020, for the purpose of electing three council members for two-year terms and one council member for a one-year term to complete an unexpired term on the city council, designating the polling places, designating voting system, and directing the giving of notice of such election and providing details relating to the holding of such election. Patty, Monique, who wants that?
We have one change to the resolution. It's going to be on the first page where we're identifying the there's a one-liner added to that to also include any other precinct provided by the administrator, Bexar County Elections Administrator.
Any other precincts authorized by the Bexar County Election Administrator?
Not any other precincts. Any other voting locations on Election Day. Any other voting places designated by the Bexar County Elections Administrator on Election Day.
Right.
This is a result of the county buying brand new voting machines used for the first time in the November election to be used a second time in the March 5th primary election, that are programmed to allow a voter to vote any voting place on Election Day, which is a big change from the way it had been historically.
Oh, right.
And so I've asked Patty to make that one modification to this resolution so that we're not in conflict with what the county is going to allow and what voters can do at the May 2nd municipal election.
All right, so So that was any other voting places designated by the Bexar County Election Administration on Election Day.
Election Day, but otherwise you had it perfect.
All right, so I will entertain a motion for the to accept the resolution with the added verbiage. From anyone.
May I make a motion that we accept resolution number R-2020-17?
Any other voting places designated by the Bexar County Election Administrator on Election Day?
There you go.
That.
Just say that.
Can I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to accept resolution 2020-715, calling a general special election on May 2nd, 2020, for the purpose of electing three council members for two-year terms and one council member for a one-year term to complete an unexpired term on the City Council, designating the polling places, designating voting system, and directing the giving of notice of such election and providing details relating to the holding of such election with the wording of any other voting places designated by the Bexar County Election Administrator on Election Day. Is there any further discussion?
Are you kidding?
Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right. That resolution passes. All right. Item 9A, request by Mayor and Council members for items to be placed on future City Council agendas and announcements on city events and community interests. Councilmember Pierce. Councilmember Apodaca.
We had a good turnout at the Senior Center breakfast, and if you didn't go, you missed some good food, and hope to see you at the next one.
February 8th.
That's all.
Councilmember Layman?
Nothing.
Councilmember Salazar?
Councilmember Grant?
Nothing, thank you.
Thank you everybody for coming this evening and everybody that spoke at the public hearing and that's signed up to speak. I did want to recognize our Eagle Scout Court of Honor again. For the Eagle Scout Troop 1412, Alejandro Salas Rios, Richard Hawking, Darren Guzman, Johnny Bacote Rogers, and Anthony Kibaloy, I never can say his name. They were had their Court of Honor on January 18th, 2020 at the VFW, and they had a wonderful turnout, and it was great to see their journey from to Eagle Scout. They worked very hard, and we're blessed to have them in our community, and they will continue to seek opportunities within the city, which I think is a blessing for Kirby. Save the date, February 8th, for the pancake breakfast at the Kirby Senior Center. It's all-you-can-eat pancakes. So if you're looking for volunteer opportunities and ways you can help, please reach out to the center. And Saturday, I believe there is the event at Friday and Saturday, there is an event for the rodeo, and there will be loud blasting music, not in Kirby, but it will sound like it's coming from your neighbor's house. So dispatch may be getting a lot of calls. Last year it was at Splashtown, and so that's where it was, but it sounded like it was coming. So everybody make note that you may hear sounds, and it's not coming from your neighbor. So, but the police may be inundated with close calls. And again, thank you, everybody. Filing for office is still going on, so if you're interested in filing for office, please pick up an application from City Hall from 8 to 5 p.m., and that goes until February 14th.
We have a special meeting on Monday.
Yes, on the 27th, there is a special meeting for City Council on the 27th at 6:30 with discussion of expansion and also employee pay scale. So that is, of course, a public meeting. It will be right here at 6:30 p.m.
Wonderful.
Anybody else?
I'll be in 7 hours.
Adjourned.
I'll be here.